Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by Texture. Now, Texture is the smarter way to do magazine subscriptions, which are fantastic this time of year, especially if you've got a New Year's resolution, you want some extra tips on diet, some new recipes, anything you want, because just about anything you would want in a magazine, you can get on Texture, because with Texture, you can read magazines for less than $10 a month with a smartphone, tablet, any internet-enabled device. You could be reading magazines without having to lug magazines all over the place or have all these costly subscriptions. Because starting at less than $10 a month, Texture offers unlimited access to all your favorite magazines for less than the price of three magazines at the grocery store. Browse hundreds of magazines and cherry-pick the articles that interest you. And the Texture editorial team recommends stories for you daily. Plus, their curated collections let you dive deeper into topics. Sign up for Texture right now, and in seconds, you'll have insider access to the very best reads, plus exclusive content. I love Texture. It's fantastic for me to be able to just flip through different magazines. It's like you're at the doctor's office without actually having to be sick. And it's super easy to use. Just click the headlines on the cover page and Texture takes you right to the articles that interest you most. So stop wasting time flipping through pages and don't waste paper or money. Get Texture today. Texture is offering the listeners of Rob as a Podcast a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/RHAP. That's TEXTURE.com/RHAP. Think about it. You'll get unrestricted access to the world's best magazines, from back issues to the ones that are on the newsstand today. So take advantage of the offer right now and take on your New Year's resolutions with some serious magazine know-how. So try Texture for free right now when you go to texture.com/RHAP.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game of Miller Times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. Here we are back with the guy who's got the game all figured out. Here he is.
Rob, yeah. I love it. I've now lost the game as many times as you have.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Stephen Fishback, welcome. Welcome again to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back on. I'm so excited. It's much better. To talk about Survivor than to play Survivor. So I'm really happy to be on this side of the microphone and not on the other. It's enraging to listen to people critique your game.
Isn't this a better job?
To just critique, and like, what, you know, the best that, you know, I can from here, I can ridicule everything someone does, the way they walk, the way they run, you know, their thinking. The best they can come at me with is like, my glasses have poop on them, you know, like that's all you can say about me.
Well, I'm so happy to have you back, and we can confirm that you will be returning to the Know-It-Alls this season.
Oh my gosh. Wow. How exciting. You know, Wiggler's done an incredible job.
He did a fantastic job. I really feel like that, you know, anybody else stepping into your shoes, I think that we would have missed a beat. And I felt like he did such an incredible job this season. And we're going to do plenty of stuff with Josh in terms of Survivor this season as well. But this is your seat that you are coming back to reclaim the throne. Yes.
Josh kept it warm. Yes. I'm sure I will get crap. You know, I know he got crap for like, oh, where's Fishback? I know I'm going to get crap for being, Wiggler was better after all. You know, and like, that's really what the internet is about, is complaining about how other things would be better.
Haters going to hate no matter what you do.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true. But anyway, so happy to have you back here. It's been basically about, a month or so since we last spoke on the podcast. And I know we wanted to do all along something in the off season. And here we are really in the teeth of this Survivor off season on the road to Survivor 32. But wow, we wanted to talk about Survivor 31 a bit more in detail with you before we got back to getting ready for another season of Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yeah, I just wanted to vindicate all of my mistakes, you know, and rationalize them.
Yes, yes. And that's exactly what we will do here today. So, Stephen, how have things been in the couple of weeks now since the finale?
It's really, really great. Honestly, it's like a great weight has been lifted off my shoulders. Every week, I, you know, was tuning in to see what embarrassing thing I did next on CBS primetime for 10 million viewers. And not having that weekly sort of like, oh my God, what is it going to be? Poems? More poems? You know, like, am I going to miss a target? Am I going to hit the other target? Like, what's this week? It's really, it's wonderful. Like, really, I feel like I'm a new human being.
How different was the experience for you to go to the finale where last time, you know, presumably you went into the finale, but there was a lot of business still to take care of. I think you knew going into the finale that you weren't the winner, but there was
this time.
Yes. What? No, but that was sort of like a
last time too. Yeah. Yeah.
You knew going into the finale, right? That you weren't in play for the win.
Yeah, of course. No, I knew that I lost.
You didn't know it was a shutout.
Did I get one vote or no votes? And that was another loss.
But to come into this finale, though, this was a more fun experience for you just to go to the finale because you just got to sort of participate and you sort of like knew the deal. There was like no stakes for you in the finale this time.
Yeah, it's so much more fun to go in. I mean, obviously probably the most fun is to go in thinking you won, you know, which I think JT certainly thought he won. And I think, you know, Jeremy hoped he won. I think going in last time, it's just so stressful because you know, like, this is this moment when you're about to be crushed in a really humiliating public moment. And like facing the jury, not to rub it in, facing the jury though is going to be really hard, especially if you're on the sort of negative end of it. They come at you with a lot of vitriol, and when you're in that sort of, you know, delicate emotional place, you know, it just sort of like shocks you, you know, at the end of this incredibly grueling experience to suddenly like be faced with all of this anger and negativity. I actually think Spencer was in very much the same place this time that I was in Token Sheens. Like, he and I shared a dressing room, and he was, you know, he was stressed. He was definitely nervous and concerned about remarks about how he would be a lesson for her children and how not to behave, and just a lot of, you know, anger coming at him. And I think he was very, very, like, really concerned about it.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And for me, it's almost like somebody who never got to the final two or final three. Well, I did get to a final three, but it wasn't the final three. It seems like, well, I would love to have gotten the opportunity to get to that point, but I guess it really is a hard thing to deal with, just sort of just getting, and really, I don't think that Spencer necessarily got eviscerated by that final three. You wrote in your People blog that you thought he actually did really well in the final three, right?
I thought he was great. I mean, I thought that his performance out of the gate was stellar. I thought he was incredibly well-spoken. I thought he showed a lot of humility, even more than I think came across on TV. Obviously I was a huge Jeremy partisan, and I thought like this kid's going to run away with it. You know, I thought there were a handful of people on the fence, and, you know, I think Jeremy gave a really solid jury performance. You know, obviously at the end, the sun bomb, you know, like you can't beat that. But until that point, you know, he had sort of been a little bit defensive, you know, like when Savage asked, you know, will you admit that you've been arrogant? He kind of like didn't agree to that. I actually asked Jeremy that throwaway question. I thought like, what's the best, you know, setup I can give Jeremy to win some points? So I asked him, what mistakes did you make in this game? And I thought, you know, this is an opportunity for him to, you know, show humility, which, you know, people were concerned that he was arrogant. This is an opportunity for him to say, you know, I'm sorry I voted you out, or to whoever he felt would be the most bitter. And in fact, he initially said none, but eventually he said, you know, Kimmy, I'm sorry that we got in a little fight just now. So he used it to sort of, you know, repair a bridge with Kimmy. But I really thought that Spencer was much better, gave a much better performance overall at the finals.
Have you reached out to Spencer since then to sort of like give him a pep talk on what it's like to go through that final tribal council? like in the sharing a dressing room? Did you talk to him at all about that?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought that he got a vote at least. He was pretty sure he got no votes. And I think he was really in the same position I was. And I kind of, tried to talk him up. I was like, listen, you've played an amazing game. Like, you've gotten to the end of this crazy season. Like, you have so much to be proud of. Like, who cares, like, how the votes come out, And, my old adage is better to lose by all the votes than by one vote. you know there was no chance.
Yeah, ancient proverb, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that I just think it's a lot of emotion. He's an emotional guy, and like me, it was I tried to like fluff him a little bit. Yeah, but he actually, it's funny. He said to me, now having played this hard game and like getting to the end and getting no votes. If I came back, I would just do all these crazy erratic moves just to make sure this never could happen. I would play so big and so huge so I would not get to the end and get no votes, because anything is better than that. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing this whole season. Like, that's entirely the game I played. It was like, let's go crazy, because like, better to go out ninth than be second with no votes.
See, I wonder if that's the evolution of a Survivor player, talking about the evolution of Survivor and the evolution of strategy, because I kind of still feel like if I was to play again, not that I want to, but I still feel like I would play kind of tight, because I would just want to get to the end. And I would say, well, I've never been to the end. I still want to get to the end. And I would almost maybe try to be a little more conservative in terms of like making sure I got to the end. Maybe I need to lose in the finals before that could really open me up to just play loosey goosey.
I think I really believe that. And I think that's the game both Tasha and Spencer were playing, certainly as the sort of end neared, was just like, I want to make it to the end in the safest possible way. I had that mentality in Token Genes for sure. Like, you got to get to the end to win at the end. But like, if you get to the end in a losing position, like, you might as well have gone out earlier. There's no,
right.
There's one. I mean, it's a much bigger check, I guess, for second place than ninth place.
Because the first time I played, I was just sort of like, hey, what the hell? Whatever. I'm on Survivor. Hey, right. Carpe diem, whatever. Let's do this. But I feel like the second time or third
that
time.
That worked out great for you.
Especially coming off of not doing well the second time, I would feel like that. Like, well, I just, I'd love to just make it to the end. That would be really incredible just to come back and do that. But then I would probably need to play a fourth time before I could really reach peak Fishback, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's more that'll be your Boston Rob. That'll be your, that'll be your redemption. The other four-time robber.
Let's sort of go through everything from this season, because we have so much ground to cover that I feel like maybe chronologically would be the way that would make the most sense. And we have so many different things that we would be able to talk about. So let's just go back to before the game started and this whole campaign process that you had to go through. I mean, how grueling was it for you, and how much did you really wonder whether or not you were going to be making the season?
Well, you knew that I was unsure about it. I mean, as you did a great impression of me, sort of like waffling about, do I do this? Do I not do this? Like, oh, I'm going to go. It's an opportunity. Oh my God, I can't go out there. Like, it'll be miserable. Like, what am I thinking? So I was even, as this sort of campaign was getting underway, I was still really ambivalent about like, is this the right thing for me to do? But yeah, it was then, there's so much, it's just exhausting. You're leaving your job, like I was winding down my job, you're saying goodbye to all of your family, you're running this campaign and you're preparing for Survivor. So I was trying to like work out three times a day, practice puzzles, practice whatever, while also trying to be as accessible on all social media, and it's tough too, because it's really hard to know what the right balance of is too much versus, the right amount of promotion, like how much promotion really helps, someone like Jeff Varner, I felt like he had a really fantastic social media campaign, but like maybe that helped him. Like, Kimmy had almost no social media campaign and she got on, other than like Gays for Kimmy or whatever. So like, it's like, you really pulled out all the stops and you sort of had to, I felt like if I'm going to do this, I have to go hard at it. It was cool. One thing that was really cool about it was seeing so many people come out and rally around me. And like, in my mind, like that was the best part of the whole season, certainly with the RHAP listeners, more than anybody. And, I certainly owe my being on the season at all to the RHAP listeners, because like that's, you know, that's what elevated me from like random mid-season game bot to, you know, contestant in this crazy awesome season of Survivor. But like that was the best part, was like having people like rally around me, you know, campaign for me, you know, put me as their Twitter avatar. You know, it was just so cool. It was just like such a great, like that was the best part. Like getting voted on was the best part. And like the moment that really maybe my favorite moment of the whole season was being on that stage when we all got voted on. And just that sort of like, you know, unmitigated joy that we all got to feel together, sitting there like, wow, we've won together and we're going on this great adventure together. And like, I don't think like, no other cast has ever had that experience of like, you know, casts are together only when they're competing against each other or when they've all already betrayed each other. So like to like be together in that moment of celebration where there was no animosity was really a special, incredible moment.
And when you got to that stage, there you were sitting in that winner position in the famous cursed photo.
Well, it's funny because like, you know, Wu's all the way on the other side of that. So I saw that like people were sitting in the wrong spots. We had been sort of like instructed of how to like fill in the seats. And of course that immediately deteriorated. And so I was like, oh, I could go off to the left, like to the back benches, or I could take that spot right there. So I thought like, you know what? I'm just going to go for the winner's seat. And it's funny, like it's like me, Tasha and Jeremy, yeah, which it's like that was my, you know, that was a very likely scenario in that game.
Yeah. Spencer's in the front row too. He's right there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Spencer, just don't vote me out one more time. We can bring the photo to life. We can make that photo happen. Should have used that pitch, actually. I didn't even think about that.
If you only would have known.
Yeah.
But talk about that night actually being there. So you're not really sure if you're going to be in the mix or not, but you probably felt like it was more likely than unlikely, right?
Well, going in, I felt decently good. I mean, I felt like, you know what? It's like, you have no idea. You know, if you think like in some moments you think I'm definitely going to make it, you know, I've got this crazy loyal fan base. Like I know they're like the biggest fans and like the most, you know, they're the ones who are going to be like voting every day. Like are Kimmy's fans really vote? I don't know. I keep going back to Kimmy, but whatever. Like, you know, she sort of to me was the sort of old schooler who was known, but like, you know, do people now, did they want to see her again? You know, are they voting every day, multiple times a day? So, and then sometimes I think like, okay, but like, this is a tiny, you know, fraction of the, you know, 11 million people who watch Survivor. There was just no way to guess, you know, what really was happening. And then, you know, as the votes were read, I started to freak out and was like, there's no way I'm going. And I was actually like looking at Spencer and like shake, because he and I had, you know, we'd obviously talked a lot before the game and talked about our chances and everything. And so I was like looking at him, like shaking my head as people were being called up, because, you know, I knew Spencer was on, I knew Joe was on. And like, I was counting the people who I knew were on. And then like once Varner was called, once Terry and Savage were both called, I was like, there's no way I'm on. And the reason was because I thought Shane was a lock, and I thought there's no way Shane's not going to be on, so there's no other spots for me. It turned out that I was wrong.
You were pretty close to the end of the line in terms of people that they announced. It was probably like maybe three quarters of the way through. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There were only a couple of rows ahead of me. You know, certainly the big row with Joe and Spencer was up front. I was sitting next to Wu as the big losers, the runners up who, you know, fell apart. You know, Wu and I had a nice moment. He like turned to me and was like, you know, it's an honor to be here sitting next to you.
Wow.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, not like, I don't think it was like because I was the honor. It was like an honor for him to be in this situation. And I was like more bummed that I didn't get to play with Wu.
I heard he said the same to Tony. Yeah,
exactly. And that was a good sign. I was like, oh, I'm going to shut you out. That was like the highest level of nerve, like sitting there, you know, your bag is in front of you and you think like, you know, tonight I'm either getting dinner with my family or I'm flying, you know, to Cambodia. And it was just like such this crazy adrenaline. And, you know, Jeff is walking down the aisle. You, not you. And just like, you know, I don't know. It may be like the one of the peaks of like adrenaline and emotion I've ever had in my life.
What about the green room and that whole day of it? Like, what was the atmosphere like behind the scenes where you're there with, it's not just the cast now, it's the whole like field of 32 and you know a bunch of people aren't going to get on. And it has to be a couple of people, like you're looking at a couple of them like, oh, you're definitely not going on. And what's that whole day like?
Yeah, you know, it was a long, long day. Like we were there for a really long time. Just, you know, that's the way CBS does it, right? I mean, with reason. They get you to the wherever you need to be and they have you sit there because they would rather have you, you know, everything sort of all their ducks in a row. Because, you know, when live TV happens, like that's freaking live TV, you know, like if someone's on a bathroom break, like that's no good. But so, you know, we, you know, all just kind of like sitting in the green room, like just a ton of like waiting. You know, we're not supposed to be talking to each other. You know, we kind of do a little bit, you know, just sort of like little like remarks to each other. You know, some people are better at it than others. Like Shane, you know, couldn't sit still, of course, and was constantly like getting up and, you know, listening to his music super loud or walking around the room or going out for a smoke break. I actually had a nice moment with Troyzan where I like felt like we shared a little moment. He and I have talked about it subsequently where like we kind of like had a little just like, you know, hey, you're a human. You know, I never like thought that I would, connect with Troyzan, but it's funny, like sometimes these like little moments of just, like looking in someone's eyes and like sharing a remark and you're like, oh, this person I could really get along with.
Yeah, you sat next to him, right, in the green room?
Yeah, I was sitting next to him. Yeah, and Wigglesworth as well, who I did not have a connection with.
And it was the first time she had ever watched Survivor, right?
I think so, yeah. That, it's funny though, she says like she never watched, and then like little things would come out like, oh, Jeremy, and then and, you know, in the Final Seven challenge in your season you did this, and I'm like, really, like you've never seen this show before? A really specific knowledge of the Christie brothers, you know. It was just a lot. It was a kind of like a dull tension all day. You're like sitting there, you're super bored, there's nothing really you can do, you know there's a lot of like fear, like, am I going? Am I not going? But it's sort of just like, it's overwhelmed by the boredom.
Okay. I'm sure we could do a whole podcast about that day and that whole night, but I don't want to get too bogged down with that. So then You guys go off to Cambodia and it's sort of like the way they do it is you can't talk to anybody. Are you just like bursting to talk to these people at this point?
And it's crazy. You know, we left the thing. We got on a bus together, you know, everyone's like kind of like freaking out, you know, there are a lot of like little gestures, like, you know, right afterwards, you know, you're a lot of the back slapping, you know, then there's an incredibly long flight to Cambodia where you're, you know, sitting next to people and, you know, you want to, like communicate with these people, but you just can't, you know, you're not allowed to, but people like, you know, you see little things develop. You know, the one I always cite is I would see sort of Savage and Jeremy. They would always be kind of like, they would always like walk next to each other and sort of like mutter under their breath at each other. Not that they were like pre-gaming at all, just like, you know, I think Savage especially would be like, oh, how are your two girls? You know, or like little things like that. And, you know, just like, it's such a weird dynamic. I mean, you know this, right? Like that before the game starts. I mean, I think it's certainly complicated as I'm sure you experience when you know the people, you know, and you're sort of like trying to guess who you like, who will like you, you know, who you could be in alliance with. And it's all totally hypothetical, but you have nothing else to think about.
But we in the Survivor All-Stars at least had, and it's again, totally different when you don't know anybody from anybody and you're sort of traveling together. On the Survivor All-Stars, that I was with the group that was ultimately going to be my tribe. And I didn't think that was going to be my tribe. I'm like, they're not going to let us just be a tribe together. We've been together for a week. I mean, I don't think they'll really do that. Little do I know. But we didn't know who the other people were that were in the cast. So we sort of knew our six.
That's really interesting.
But we didn't know who the other 12 people were going to be who were there. Or I mean, we assumed it was going to be 12 people at that point. There hadn't even ever been a tribe or cast of 18 at that point in time. So that was a little bit of a different dynamic. But you guys had to wait around for a really long time to play. What was it, like 10 days before the game actually started?
It was super long. Yeah, this was the longest one ever. And part of that was because, you know, we did press in Los Angeles for a couple of days. Then we went to Cambodia where we started off, you know, around Angkor Wat, which was awesome. Like my mom, before the season started, it was like, you should tell them to, you know, ask if we would go to see Angkor Wat. And I said, I don't think so. You typically just go to location and then, you know, and you don't like take a tour of the country. And she was like, you should ask them if you can go to Angkor Wat. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll pass that message along, mom. Like, you know, my mom wants me to go to Angkor Wat, but you know, maybe she talked to Mark Burnett or something. Cause there we were. And it was so cool. But yeah, it was a really, really long time. Like, you know, 10 days of like not talking to anybody, just like sort of sitting, you know, we were at where Ponderosa was. So, you know, you sort of get a sense of it. It's just like, and we were in these tiny, tiny little orange tents that had no ventilation. It was so hot. like these tents were on the beach, and like they were just like, I thought I would suffocate in the tent at night. It was so, so hot. Like actually getting to the shelter was like nicer than being in these tents. They were so miserable. You know, you're acclimating to the elements, you know, you're doing some press stuff, you know, Wiggler came out to location. I asked Wiggler, you know, like, who's out to get me? And he wouldn't tell me, the jerk. You know, like, what kind of you know, journalistic integrity is this?
That would frustrate me.
Yeah. Like, you know who is targeting me.
I mean, I remember when Survivor All-Stars happened, and after I got voted out, like, I remember being annoyed with the producers. I mean, like, why didn't you tell me that something was going on? Like, I mean, I'm like, I'm giving you everything I've got. Like, I felt like that there would be some loyalty to me that they would sort of like, hey, like, Rob, just, you know, just like, like give me a heads up. I mean, it's, you get annoyed, I feel like.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Especially because like all of these people can see it happening, you know, and you have no clue.
Somebody, yeah, tell me what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Or put me on a better tribe.
Either one. That's fine too. Yeah. But going back to, you know, you mentioned Josh in his interview with you. He mentions about how you are now beginning, not necessarily severe, but the gastrointestinal distress is real. At what point did you start to not feel well heading into the game?
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, it sucked so much. Like three or so days before we started, I started to get sick at Ponderosa. And it was just like maybe even 4 days. And it was, you know, that's when you want to be like focusing, relaxing, you know, putting on weight. You know, you're supposed to eat a lot at Ponderosa, right? Because you want to like just like get that like sort of like maximum size. Some other people will disagree with that.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways.
But I mean, you want to have some kind of dietary strategy. Definitely, like, you know, pooping a lot is not the proper Ponderosa strategy. So I was getting sick even there, and the doctor didn't want to give me any antibiotics because they thought, you know, going into this game where I would be exposed to a lot of different bacteria to sort of weaken my kind of core of like good bacteria was a bad idea, right? Because I was like going to be in this foreign environment. So they thought it made more sense for me not to. So, but it just like sucked, you know, 7 years I've been waiting to go back into this game. I'm so excited, obviously very nervous. And then suddenly I'm like feeling sick and out of the gate. And it just was like such a, you know, I mean, I, as you know, I have a tendency to dwell and obsess, and it was an easy thing to get upset about. Just like how I was feeling, and, you know,
And did the other people sense, like, were you sort of afraid to let other people know that something is going on? And at the same token, it's like, you know, you have to go to the bathroom a number of times. And it's like, it's hard to sort of, you know, keep that sort of to yourself. Everybody is paying super attention to everything going on. And the more times you're headed to the bathroom, I feel like other people are going to start to say, boy, Steven's not feeling good. I wonder, should we vote him out early?
Yeah, absolutely. That is exactly correct. Like I, you know, you have to raise your hand, and every time you leave, you know, you say, I got to go to the bathroom. And, you know, that's it. Like I was totally afraid that I was putting a target on my back.
Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, what do you do? Do you not go? Do you try to?
No, I mean, I had to go. You know, other people though, you know, then I noticed that I wasn't the only, I think there were some other people who got a little bit sick beforehand, and maybe it was a combination of something bad or, you know, nerves. But you know, other people too were, going to the restroom a lot. And some people, I'm not going to name names, were like really picky about like their shower schedule. You know, there was like, there were these like limited showers, and we all had to shower. You know, they had to really organize the showers because like no two people could be like alone together for any amount of time. So, you know, if you walked off to the showers, you had to walk by yourself, you know, you couldn't go with someone else. So it were very, the level of orchestration that just goes into keeping the contestants apart from each other while like living right next to each other is pretty remarkable, and certainly like a testament to the casting group.
So what are you saying, that there were people that were like trying to throw off the system, like to pass notes in the shower, or they were just like really picky about their hygiene of, I need to be showering this many times?
Yeah, picky about their hygiene, you know, and it's like, this isn't the wrong place. And like, I feel like that brings more of a target to you. Like saying I have to go to the bathroom is probably less bad than like, you know, I need to shower at such and such a time. Wait, otherwise I'm not going to.
You wouldn't think Keith Nail would be that picky about how many times he's taking showers. Yeah. What a diva.
You know, and he got great, you know, conditioner and shampoo. You know, he would just spend hours in there like lathering himself up with body lotion and body scrub. not expected.
Now, at the point where they put you guys into the boats at the beginning of the season, do you realize that that's going to be your tribe of 10?
No, because you think maybe this is, there are two possibilities, right? When we got on the boats, we figured we're probably with these people, not certainly, because you really don't know anything is certain. You know, I said, I had a confessional I'm pretty proud of. Like, until Jeff Probst says it or you read it on parchment, like, you really don't know anything, which is really true. And, like, I think that level of, like, total ignorance is something that, like, never is totally comes across. Is like, you don't know anything, you know? So we're in boats and we think maybe it's four tribes of five, right? You know, obviously we felt like we had the strongest boat. Looking at my boat, you know, with Savage and Jeremy, you know, Tasha, you know, I was decently strong, you know, bad aim, but decently strong. And then we had Sierra, who's our smallest person. We looking around, we're the strongest boats. We're like, this is great. You know, and we thought like, you know, basically any of the other boats except the really weak boat, you know, we're going to be really good with, certainly. And you know, I was upset out of the gate. I was upset because I was like, these people, I don't know at all. You know, I know that, you know, Savage and Jeremy are like already kind of close, and like, I don't want to be with them. I know that Savage isn't going to like me. I've never really bonded with Tasha, and like, I guess Sierra, but like, it was funny. Like, once we got in the boat, like, you know, Sierra sitting up front, the four of us kind of like exchanged a look, me, Tasha, Savage, and Jeremy, and like pointed at Sierra. Like, so out of the gate, if that was a tribe of five, Sierra is the first one gone. And it's crazy. Wow. Like, that's
what
how
was that
fast
based off of?
She was in the front of the boat.
That's it.
And she was, you know, the smallest, right? So she's like clearly the smallest and, you know, had a reputation. But it was just like, you know, I think in any situation on Survivor, everyone is looking for like, how do I make sure it's not me? And how do I like get a group of people around me? Mm-hmm. And it was like that fast in that situation. We couldn't talk to each other, but we immediately found, you know, all right, we're good. Like that's target number one, like good to go. And obviously, you know, as soon as we like joined up with the other boat and realized we were a tribe of 10, like that very quickly shifted. But that's, you know, that's how quickly things, you know, are made and unmade on Survivor. And then in the distance, we saw that pirate ship, and I like knew immediately. I turned back to Savage. He's like, you ready for another marooning? He's like, no way. There's no way they're going to do that again. And that's what it was.
Yeah. And then, so you guys go through the whole thing. You have to load up your boat, and then they have the twist where you're going to ultimately get more bags of rice. Now, I remember from that moment where I think it's Kelly Wigglesworth that ultimately jumps in, and then yeah. Wu is gonna ultimately jump into. And there's a moment where Joe is in the boat, and Joe says, should I jump in? And you're like, yes, you definitely should. Are you trying to throw him under the bus that early?
Oh, God, no. I mean, out of the gate, I wanted to be with Joe. Like, I had spoken to Joe once on the phone, and I felt like we had connected. Like, I really liked Joe. And in fact, Joe was the first person I talked to after we got off the boats. And it was like, listen, we got to be together. Like, you know, this could be a really good partnership. And yeah, like he maybe the second person, maybe after Tasha. But you know, it's funny. Like, that was such, it was kind of Joe's fault. Like, everyone else was like, let's go. And Joe was sort of like, yeah, let's go. But then he would like race back up to the top of the ship to get another like bag of, you know, like kumquats or whatever. And so like, he kind of was like, was the reason we were so, but then we also were like, we didn't really work together very well at like in terms of like paddling and like people sitting in the right place. But it was very clear that they, not only did they like quickly come together and have an early lead, but then, you know, like when they started swimming, like, there was a moment when, you know, obviously it was smart of Wu to jump in afterwards, but there was a moment when it would like look like Joe might pass Wiggles because Wiggles was going to gas out. So yeah, you know, I mean, the worst moment or the first terrible moment, I'll say, for me of this season was after the other tribe got the rice, they were like paddling off, like celebrating, like really aggressively together. And like literally every single person who I wanted to play with was on that other raft. Like every person who I even had some desire to play with, except for Joe, was on that other raft. You know, Spencer was there. Wentworth was there. Terry, who I know and really like, was over there. Wigglesworth, who I've met and thought I could connect with, was over there. God, Shireen was over there. You know, PG, who I know, you know, I sort of knew through Courtney. I never like knew her, but like I knew, you know, I knew of her. Like every single person on the other, and Varner, you know, every person who I wanted to play the game with was on the other tribe. And like, here I was on this miserable tribe, you know, watching all of my friends go off paddling with rice and just thinking like, this is terrible. Like, I'm going to be the first person voted out and I'm sick. And it's just like, had such a low. And Survivor, you know, it's all highs and lows. I'm like, that's sort of like what's great about it is like, is that like the, that like incredible high emotions and then the lows. And that was such a low for me. And it lasted for a couple of days. It really kind of like screwed up my game.
But how much of that was in your own head? Like, did you psych yourself out at that point where it's like, oh, all the people I wanted to be with are on the other tribe? And then did that sort of manifest itself where it did seem like, at least from the edit, that then the people that you were worried about not liking you seemed to be doing their own thing, which did not include you? Did you feel like that was a bit of self-fulfilling prophecy, or you just felt like that you had an amazing read on that that was what was going to happen?
You know, I think it was a mix. I do think a lot of it was accurate. You know, I think that I was correct that Savage would target me early, you know, and that I think really hurt me a lot. I think I came in with this reputation that of being super strategic, of being a game player, of, you know, I think there was this idea of me as being like really duplicitous too, which is not true. And I think over two seasons, I've proven that, like, if anything, my fault is being overly loyal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so I went like basically on a person by person, you know, apology tour. I was like, listen, you know I've got this reputation. I know I've got this blog, I've got this podcast, but you know, if you listen to me at all, or if you read anything I've written, you know, you can see that I really believe in strong alliances and that I think the strongest alliance sticks together. So, you know, hopefully that's all a good thing and not a bad thing. And people were open to that, but like, you know, it didn't really affect how they thought about me fundamentally. You know, like, it's just words, you know, and once you've got a, you know, you kind of like really crave snap judgments of people because you have nothing to base any decisions on. So if you have some kind of snap judgment or some kind of preconception, like, you kind of want to go with it. But, and I also was hurt because out of the gate, and this is, I'm not blaming you per se.
Me?
You had said, you had said, like, listen, you know, this game is going to move really fast. You know, you better be ready for that. And I said that.
What do I know about this?
Well, you know, I mean, I just trust everything you say.
That doesn't sound like something I would say.
So I stepped out of the boat and was like, go, 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 all systems go. And I think that was, you know, I forgot not just how slow the game is inherently, but also, like, I think I was particularly on a slow tribe. Like, watching the show and even hearing about Takeo, like, they were what I imagined the game would be. You know, a few old schoolers were building the shelter while, like, everyone was all off scrambling on the beach, like, making mm-hmm. alliances. And that wasn't at all what Bion was like. You know, Bion was kumbaya. We're all going to sit down and build the shelter together. You know, we're all going to do everything together. If anyone ever walks off, they're, you know, probably betraying us all, you know, like, team spirit, rah, rah, rah. And I think part of that was just sort of Savage really emerged very quickly as the leader, just kind of like more like the moral and a spiritual leader, you know, than anything.
He set the tempo.
Yeah, he said that's a better way of putting it. He set the tempo.
The maestro. So
exactly. I've played with maestros before. And, you know, like, he has this demeanor of like, my word is my bond. You know, the things I say are totally true. I'm so old school. And for a while, everyone bought into it, you know, until it was clear that that was about as true as it is for Coach, which is, you know, it's largely true for Coach when it's convenient. But, you know, I think that kind of really hit this chord with everybody. And, you know, also the people, maybe for whatever reason, were like less schemey people. And, you know, I was also hurt very early on by this rep that I got for looking for idols, which was, I mean, it wasn't like, so I think that there was nothing I could do to avoid getting a rep for looking for idols. I think that, you know, whenever I left camp, I was always going to, people were always gonna be like, where's Fishback? He's off looking for idols. He's so schemey. He's, you know, playing the game too hard, too fast. But, you know, I also, part of the issue was, 10-person tribe is big. It's a lot of people. And in fact, it's more people than you really need to do the things that you need to do as a tribe. You know, building shelter is like a 3 or 4 person activity. You know, some other people are weaving palm fronds. You know, Kimmy and I dug a fire pit, but I quickly realized that I was just like sitting around kind of awkwardly watching other people do things. And, you know, I would try to sit in and like do something, and it was never, you know, great. So I thought, like, you know, great, I'll go get some firewood. I'll explore this island. And you know what? If I cross an idol's path, like, I'm not gonna say no to that. And like that famous swamp scene, you know, if you on day one of Survivor pass this swamp where there's a giant gnarled tree right at the center of it, and you don't think, you know what, I'm gonna take 10 seconds and take a quick look, like, I don't believe you. I don't think you're a fan of the game if you would not run into that swamp just like I did, take a glance in that tree and get out of there.
Why didn't you take your pants off? Because I felt like that seemed very suspicious that you came back with wet pants. And it was like, well, Steven, why did you go in the water?
Oh, it was so, everyone was in the water. I mean, it was so hot. Like, I actually walked into the ocean and like joined, you know, other people in the ocean, like from there. Like, it was, everyone was so, so, so hot that, you know, we were in the water all the time. Like, having wet pants was irrelevant. I mean, but I do think that, like, you know, I was off looking for wood. There was not that much wood to be found. And I did not do a great job of like hiding that I was, you know, my wood sort of searching was not that successful. So I was sort of looking for idle. I think it was a fair judgment. And, you know, I think Sierra or someone came to me like out of the gate. Cause you know, those first few moments when you step off the raft are like total chaos. Like everyone is off in every direction, making alliances, talking for the first time. You know, you've got this 10 days of buildup. You have this month of buildup, you know, with the whole campaign and everything. And suddenly, like, you're like let loose on the beach and you just explode. And it's like every sort of like conceivable arrangement of people is being made and proposed as an alliance, you know? So you know, in the episode, you see Jeremy talking to Savage, talking to Joe, talking to, you know, whomever. And that was like one group, but there were like, you know, 18 different groups out of those 10 people with different arrangements of them. So, you know, the biggest group in my mind was like the, you know, my groups early on were like our boat plus Joe was one of the early groups. And then on day two, I made a secret alliance with Tasha, Sierra, and Jeremy. You know, I went up to Jeremy and I said to him, like, look, you know, you and I knew that he and Josh on his season had like sort of feuded, obviously. And then at Ponderosa, the two of them had sort of just like been like, why didn't we work together? You know, we're so stupid. Like, together we could have run this game. So I went over to him and I was like, listen, Jeremy, like, you know, I don't want the same thing to happen that happened with you and Josh. Like, if the two of us work together, like, we could run the game together. And he was really receptive to that. But it wasn't until I screwed something else up a little later that we actually became really tight.
Well, what was that?
Well, so Jeremy, Sierra, Tasha, and I had this little alliance. And I said, like, hey, let's name this. Because I thought, like, if we give the alliance a name, it's going to, like, stand out in people's minds a little bit more than... you know, if you don't give it a name, like, there's so many different like groups being made. Like if we put a name on it, then people are kind of going to kind of be like more like invested in it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we call ourselves the elements and Jeremy was fire and Tasha was earth. And, you know, I guess I was water and Sierra was air, but like that was never.
What are you, like, Captain Planet?
Yeah. Well, then it's funny. Then Cass walked up right as we were forming the elements and she's like, what's going on here? And we're like, new alliance. We're the elements. You're the fifth element, spirit or like heart or whatever it was, you know, like we really, it was like based on Captain Planet. But so, you know, the famous, you know, Savage wife story is where like my huge screw up happened. So, you know, whatever, like Bayon is like terrible, right? Like we're all sitting around, like whenever anybody leaves the shelter, you know, it's a travesty. It's a sin against God. It's a sin against, you know, Savage.
When you say it's terrible, hold on. You're saying it's like torturous to be there. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because, you know, you really, it's like you're on Survivor. You know, we have this whole island to explore and like you couldn't leave this like 4 foot by 4 foot, you know, little enclave without everyone kind of freaking out at you. And I knew that was true for me, especially. You know, and there were some people who it was okay. Like Joe could go off for as long as he wanted because everyone trusted Joe. And, you know, Savage could go off because everyone trusted Savage. And, like Keith could go off because like Keith had no idea what he was doing, you know? And so like everyone, you know, but like for most people, like if they left the shelter, people were like, are they looking for idols? And anyway, I was kind of like losing my mind just like sitting around in that shelter all day, every day. And you really had to like find moments to chat with people. And it was tricky. But so Savage, you know, starts telling this great story about his wife and
the story.
Yeah. And I'd heard this story before from Savage almost verbatim. And maybe I was less invested in it. You know, I had sort of used up all of my like oohs and ahs the first time I heard it. So he tells that story. And then, you know, a little bit later, Jeremy goes off. You know, the way the episode has it, it like looks like, you know, he walks off immediately. And then immediately I say, you know, Jeremy's off looking for idols, but Jeremy was gone for a long time. And, but it was a mistake, but I didn't like say it in the shelter. Like it's portrayed in the episode. I mean, if you look at that moment, you know, you never actually see me talking in the shelter. It's just audio of me. But you know, I went privately to Savage and I said, hey, well, first I like did once the shelter kind of cleared out. I think I said it to like Tosh and Cass, like, are we worried at all about Jeremy? And then privately, I went over to Savage and said, listen, are you worried about Jeremy? You know, he's off looking for idols. And that was a huge mistake. Like that was presented as a mistake in the episode because it was, me being, you know, like kind of tone deaf to just blurting this thing out in the shelter. And that didn't happen. But it was a bigger mistake than that, because Jeremy was really my best ally out there. And here I was, like, you know, mentioning his name in a negative way. It was one of the dumbest things I did the entire season.
What were you going for? Were you just trying to make conversation with Andrew, or was it like, were you trying to make him feel like he could trust you?
Yeah, the latter. I was like, A, trying to kind of like throw the idle paranoia around. Like, B, I was like legitimately paranoid. You know, to say Jeremy was my best ally, like, he and I had like a verbal alliance of like a day, you know, and like, you know, I wanted to kind of just generally sort of take the heat off me by adding it as a more kind of camp wide heat. But if I, you know, I could have predicted, had I thought for like 10 seconds, that Savage would immediately go to Jeremy and kind of throw my name under the bus. And when Jeremy came back to camp, he was like clearly upset. And I was like freaking out at this point. Because, like, you know, like my number one ally, who I'm kind of relying on right now, because I know that my name is coming out of a lot of people's mouths, is suddenly, you know, like pissed at me. And he says, like, Tasha, like, hey, Tasha, can I talk to you by the water for a second? And Tasha goes down by the water, and I see them talking, and I'm just like dying inside. And it's like seconds past like hours, you know, like you see like your whole fate in the game unraveling. But then Tasha came back and like pulled me aside a little bit later. And actually, she really succeeded at smooth it out. And she was like, listen, Jeremy was upset that you mentioned the Savage, but I told him, like, you know, no way, Fishback's good. And, you know, it was just a misunderstanding, and you just need to go talk to Jeremy about it. So I like went to Jeremy and like apologized incredibly profusely. And, you know, it was like, I screwed up, you know, like, please, like, this was a mistake of mine. And, you know, like, I really want to be with you. And it's like if a lover has, you know, wronged you, you know, they're just like the abject apologies. And, you know, so he said later was when he started to actually trust me, because I was like so clearly upset and sincere. And then at the end of that conversation, I was like, you know, I tried to like shake his hand, and he like took a step back from me, which I thought was such a smart moment. I wrote about it later. You know, he like didn't shake hands, because he was like, anyone can come up the beach like watching us shake hands. Like, that's so dumb. And he was right. You know, like, it was such a dumb moment. I was just like so relieved that this situation had been salvaged. But, you know, I mean, it was just like, that to me was like a good metonymic moment for how smart Jeremy was all game. You know, he was not going to let something like a handshake screw up his gameplay.
Now, you talked about from the pregame that you talked to Joe on the phone. You wanted to work with Joe, but by the second episode of the show, and around this same time that you're talking about the famous Andrew Savage story, you're talking about how Joe, he's the ultimate merge boot, that Joe needs to go. Almost, you don't seeming like you are going to be targeting him like you were later in the game when you talked about Moby Dick, but it seems like you're out on Joe by this point.
You know, it's interesting. Like, Joe, like, I still felt like I had something with Joe. I don't remember, like, maybe, you know, certainly the first couple of days, but I also saw him go off a lot with other people who he didn't say he was with. Like, he would go off with Sierra, or he would go off with Cass. And so I knew Joe was playing like a lot of different angles. And then, you know, Jeremy had taken me aside and was like, listen, Savage and Joe want you gone. And that's, you know, when I learned that Joe was targeting me, that was pretty much when I soured on Joe. You know, part of those two things, right? It was two things. In terms of like an alliance, like, that was when I soured on Joe. I mean, Jeremy said to me, listen, Savage and Joe want you gone. Don't say anything. So Jeremy was off looking for idols. And he said to me, you know, he would go look for idols, and he might have to slip me the idol to play if it came down to that, so that I could surprise like Joe and Savage. So, you know, the other thing was, like, Joe is definitely a golden boy, and he is a wonderful young man, and he is fantastic in challenges and great at Survivor and just like really kind and funny. But he was a little bossy around camp. And I think I reacted badly to that. You know, he was the youngest guy by far at our, you know, I mean, Sierra too was young, but like, you know, this is a tribe full of 30, 40 and 50 year olds. And, you know, Joe sort of acted kind of like the big boss, and that rubbed me the wrong way. And I do think part of it, so there was like two things with Joe, right? There was one, regardless of alliances, I don't really love this temperament, you know, this kind of bossiness of his. And then two, when he actively started talking, you know, targeting me, like, I really didn't like it.
You didn't care for that.
Yeah, I didn't love that. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of me going after Joe was totally reactive to him going after me. And maybe he feels the same way, that it was just like this vicious cycle of us targeting each other.
But he was going after you that early, or this is still later on in the game?
No, this is very early. This is like first Bion
was he coming after you? You guys had talked pregame. What was it about you?
An alliance or anything. I think, you know, he probably talked to a lot of people pregame.
Not me.
You know, I was. Didn't he talk to you pregame?
He did not.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, he was on gag order though, right? So
I don't believe, Steven.
Really?
I mean, it's not a big deal, but no, I didn't talk to Joe. I mean, I talked to Shireen.
Yeah.
Talked to Max Dawson.
Interesting. Mike?
I talked to Mike pretty regularly before that, but yeah. Not on an interview.
Yeah, so, you know, just like really briefly, we'd exchange texts about like what we were doing to bulk up or whatever. But like, I went in really liking him and really wanting to work
with him. It's a pretty bro-y text, Steven.
Yeah, you know, that I can operate at that register, or I thought I could operate at that register. I mean, that was the other thing that was really surprising to me about those first few days. Was like, I went in thinking, you know, like, I'm a 36-year-old guy, you know, like I'm pretty successful in my life, you know, I'm really happy, I'm confident. I'm going to be like, I don't want to be like a leader, but I'm going to be like a real, you know, I can be like a sort of a force in this game, a positive, confident, you know, self, you know, in, you know, force. And then I got out there and I don't know if it was, you know, just this alchemical combination of the people I was with and the situation I was with and like my ambivalence to start with. And I just like reverted back to that like awkward, uncomfortable nerd I was in high school. And it was like so like humbling and like scary, you know. And we've like talked a lot in past seasons about how survivor tribes, especially pre-merge tribes, are a lot like high school. You know, there's the cool kids and the nerdy kids, and like I always thought like people, you know, I just was amazed to see it happening to me. Like I was like watching a train wreck in slow motion where I was like, well, you know, get it together, Fishbat, you know. And certainly for the first few days I was like, what are you doing here? You know, like you're just like so awkward and weird and like, you know, like what, you just like, you know, just uncomfortable and like, you know, what's going on?
But yeah,
it's so crazy. Like it's like deep part of me came out.
I did see that with you, because I feel like that if you are in a room with like me and a bunch of other nerds, you're probably the most alpha guy in the room. But I guess just from being with that group of guys, that you are the nerdiest guys of those five guys that are there. And I don't know, you just like got too much in your head with that.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I really don't. And, you know, I can like, you know, I can bro down occasionally with bro-y guys. But like, it was just such a weird. It was really like in some ways, and I've actually like started seeing a therapist, not just because of this one experience, but be like partially because of Survivor, just like it revealed to me so many of these sort of like deep seated issues that I thought were no longer there. And I was like, I really didn't like, you know, the way I was emotionally reacting to things. And so I'm trying to address that.
Then this is post this season or post Token Sheens?
No, post this season, post this season.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's been great. It's really been great. You know, it's been fantastic. Yeah. So there was just this combination of things where like, you know, for whatever reason, Joe was targeting me, for whatever reason, like I was so, you know, uncomfortable. And I mean, I guess like out of the gate, you know, we were everyone kind of agreed, you know, first cast was sort of the default boot, but then everyone was sort of like Monica is actually the default boot. And people were doing small things to kind of throw Monica under the bus. Like even I was always like observing how chummy she was with people. Like, oh, look, there's Monica chatting with Jeremy again. Those two are sure getting close, aren't they? You know, kind of like little things to throw her under the bus. And then I think like Tasha or someone said that Monica had told her, or maybe Kimmy said that she couldn't wait. No, must have been Tasha. Tasha said Monica told her she couldn't wait until she could flip. And, you know, I don't know if Monica ever really said that. You know, Monica denies it. Tasha, you know, affirms it. But like just little ways that Monica was kind of like ostracized as like the devious one. And what's interesting to me is that like as the game goes on, literally everyone who's voted out is ostracized as the devious one. You know, it's like all of the, it's like a scapegoat in the sort of the classical sense where all of the sins of the group are like placed on this other person who is then like sacrificed and like sent on their way. And then like the next day you're always like, man, it's, things are so good and peaceful now that we've gotten rid of the devious one. You know, like every single person who we eliminated with that would, same sort of narrative.
Just sticking with Monica for a second, and that's going to lead us into talking about what went on in the post swap buy-on, where Monica is going to be the first person that you vote out in this season. I felt like coming into the season, like that night that you guys all left, I was talking with Jim Rice and Ken Raskoff at the after party. We're talking about like who's going to win. And we're all saying like, yeah, probably Monica, right? Monica's probably going to be the winner just because we felt like she has that person that's going to be under the radar, who's going to slip through this whole thing. Are you guys thinking in that way also about the Monicas that are out there?
I think that was part of it. I mean, the other thing is like Monica is an incredibly nice person. She's very nice and polite, but like that, like there's something about that niceness that like seemed phony on Survivor. You know, it's like everyone's hustling and scheming and she sort of was, but you just like, you never felt like you were like really connecting to like the underbelly of who Monica really was, you know? And she would flirt with everybody, you know, she was very flirtatious. And I think, you know, I certainly think on our tribe, right? Like we didn't have the Takeo kind of fixation on big alpha males. We, you know, our tribe was very much like big alpha males are good. You know, I think that she was an easy kind of initial target because she was so flirty with so many people, because, you know, you never felt like you were really connecting with her, you know, because of a number of reasons, you know, probably because of what you're saying, you know, she was like, seemed like that type of person who might slip through the cracks. She was sort of an early target. And the other thing was that she and Kimmy were really close, really fast. And
until Clamgate,
everyone, right. I know what actually happened was like someone, people told Kimmy that Monica was targeting her. So it really turned Kimmy on against Monica because Kimmy felt so betrayed by that. But actually Monica had not been targeting Kimmy at all. In fact, Monica had been trying to save Kimmy because Kimmy in Monica's mind was the presumptive boot, even though everyone else was planning on targeting Monica. Was that clear at all? Did that make sense?
I think we got it. I think we got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it was a campaign of disinformation against Monica, basically. I mean, anyway, just to say very quickly that like, I knew she was the first to go, but then it looked really likely that I was the next to go. And that even, I think Jeremy had made it clear that I might have even passed like Monica in the tribe, you know, in the order of elimination, like Savage and Joe were that concerned about me.
Wow.
At that point, like literally the morning of the swap is when Jeremy says, all these people are coming for you. And so I'm freaking out. And when we, you know, show up at the field, you know, with a very, after a very vague clue, no, you know, I was looking over at Spencer and now being like, save me. Like, I didn't know how he was going to do it, but I was like, Spencer, save me. Little did I know that like the previous night, Spencer himself had almost been eliminated. So he was in a sort of save me position as well. You know, swap, you know, I'm obviously terrified. You know, there's so much randomness in Survivor and there's nothing is more random than the swap, where it's like you could end up with all of your friends or all of your enemies and there's no, you have no control over it. So Sierra and I both picked last following Tyson's model. Sierra picked last for the girls. I picked last for the guys. It was a dream. All buy-on buffs, you know, me, Jeremy, my closest ally was buy-on, you know, majority buy-on with Monica and Kimmy being buy-on. And then Spencer, who, you know, I felt like probably was my closest ally in the game, was buy on, and freaking Wigglesworth, who, whatever, you know, I liked her well enough. But like, I like walked in there thinking like I could be one of the next eliminated. And I walked out feeling like I was in a position of power. And it so completely changed, not just like my strategic thoughts about my position in the game, but even just my emotional, you know, awareness. I just felt like confident. I felt, you know, and it's crazy like how much confidence has like an effect on your performance in Survivor. I remember talking about this with Cochran pre-game and he was like, you know, he's saying, talking about challenges and how like he did much better in challenges in Karamoan because he knew he wasn't really up for elimination, so he could just play confidently. And I really kind of felt that, like, coming back to camp from that swap, just like my whole game and like mentality like opened up. I wasn't in this sort of defensive, how do I scrabble through one more day posture. I could actually start thinking about, like, what do I want to do here?
That's why Jeremy said,
hey, you gotta have confidence in yourself, yo. You got confidence in you, have it in yourself, man.
Yeah.
Hey, relax, man.
And you finally were able to relax, man.
Oh my God. He was on me all the time about it. And it was like so frustrating because I was like, who cares? It's a freaking, you know, balancing a thing on a thing. It's a slingshot. It's a putting the ball in a hole.
But I don't think you can say that because there are so many people that are that like invested in it. Like, it really does mean a lot. Like you and I know that in the scheme of things, like how good you are at ring toss doesn't ultimately have a reflection on your self-worth. But I think you got to at least pretend when you're out there that, like, it you know, it kills you to not be good at the ring toss.
Yeah, I guess.
It's like, oh, I want it so badly for you guys. I really want to. It kills me that I underperformed for you guys.
The thing was, the only time it actually affected anything was when we lost the chicken the chicken meal by one toss, and that was terrible. Was in fact me. Yeah. So,
but I think it does help. I think you at least want to beat yourself up to some degree, to the point where, like, hey, no, it's not that bad. Like, I feel like I would want other people to, like, come to me and be like, Rob, it's okay. Like, we didn't need it. It was fine.
Yeah. It was just so weird for me. Like, the people I was with were so competitive, you know, it's like, we at one point I'm the third buy-on. We talked about, like, throwing a challenge, and it was like, I was suggesting we kill our parents, you know. I was like pushing to throw a challenge to get rid of Joe, and it was like such a non-starter.
Okay, well, that brings up a very interesting point, because when you guys ultimately did go to that tribal council with Monica, where she was the person who got voted out, that reading between the lines from Twitter, it almost seemed to say, from what you and Jeremy were signaling on Twitter, that maybe you guys might have been throwing that challenge. Ultimately, I believe that's also when you hit the target for the other team.
Yeah, yeah.
were you guys trying to throw a challenge to get rid of Monica?
So the situation was, you know, this was what, like day 12 or whatever, day 9. You know, it was like pretty deep in the game. It was almost like a week or and a half and 2 weeks in. And, like, you know, I think first of all, everyone felt like if Monica gets to another swap or emerge, you know, we weren't thinking of a second swap. If Monica gets to emerge, you know, she can cause trouble for us. You know, she's very eager to flip on us. You know, we don't really trust her. She's someone who's, you know, can be disloyal later in the game. And, you know, I was feeling that I was worried that we'd never been to tribal council together. You know, theoretically, Kimmy, Jeremy, and I, and to a lesser extent, Spencer, had this sort of tight bond. And, you know, I've previously talked about, like, intentionally not singing, right? Like, throwing all the challenges with the thought that, like, if you go to tribal council more, your alliance is tighter, you become more seasoned in the game, like, you've proven trust to each other. Like, there's a lot of actual benefits about going to the tribal council. I know there's, like, that sort of cliche, oh, you never want to go to tribal council, but that's not true. You know, you never want to go to tribal council and be eliminated. But, you know, there are really good things about going to tribal council. And so, feeling as I did, I talked it over with Jeremy, and we kind of came to the conclusion that, like, we wouldn't throw it per se, but, like, maybe we wouldn't put our best effort into it and we'd see what happened. And so that's why he sat out. Like, he was like, you know what, I'm going to, you know, he felt like, you know what, like, if we lose this one, it's okay. Like, let's put the B squad up. And I was, like, sort of messing around up there on the slingshot. Like, I wasn't, like, taking it too seriously. Now, I did not intend, you know, maybe my subconscious intended for me to hit the other team. I wasn't intending that. I was, like, but I was not, like, being, you know, really focused and, like,
well, it's interesting you mentioned subconscious, because I'm not sure if you had read what Jeff Probst had said about you, but Jeff Probst felt like it was almost like the law of attraction that you said before the run up to the challenge, hey, what happens if you hit the target for the other team? And Jeff sort of, like, dressed you down like, that has never ever happened before. Yeah, we've never even talked about that. It's impossible. Yeah. And he said, lo and behold, you went up there and you did it because you put that seed in your head.
It's true. And I believe, you know, like maybe there's something to that, you know, and like honestly, like talking about this stuff with my therapist, it's like it sounds silly, but I, you know, maybe there's something like when you're like thinking about it, like your body and your mind, you know, act in ways that you're not even, you know, totally in control of. Right. Like, I mean, that's not like revolutionary. So I, you know, there's something like there's probably something to that.
Can't believe you're talking about the slingshot with your therapist.
Yeah, you know.
After you poo-pooed it.
Well, more like not, you know, it never bothered me. You know, I thought it was really funny. And it was like, I was amazed that Twitter like reacted so badly to that. Like, I was like, I got like obliterated from like people's like the vitriol. As for in my mind, it was like hilarious, you know, like, so we were kind of okay with losing, and then going to tribal council, I think it's good to vote with people, you know, like you can say, well, what if you're wrong? You could be the one going home. And that's true of a lot of decisions you make in Survivor. You know, you sort of have to make the best decisions you can with the knowledge you have. And if you're wrong, then you go home and you probably deserve to go home for being wrong. But you've got to play a game that, you know, is also going to be good, not just one that's like cautious and fearful.
Right.
So I was happy with that, with the choice. And obviously it worked out really well.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to start getting a little blood on your hands in the game and start to really get a feel for what's going on. I think that it's probably foolish to do it, to go out of your way to say, okay, yeah, let me start going to some tribal councils here. But I think it doesn't hurt you as much as it's not the worst thing in the world to start getting a feel for the game.
The one thing I didn't like was that Jeremy wanted me to not tell Spencer or Kelly that what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't know moving forward what was going to happen. We didn't know there'd be more swaps. We didn't know there, you know, what when the merge would be. We speculate endlessly because you get nothing but time. But you know, I thought it was an opportunity to start building trust. So I did take Spencer aside because, you know, when I saw Spencer, like he and I had a big hearty, you know, welcome at the well. We walked up to the well together. We had like a big, you know, welcome. I kind of shared with him basically everything I knew. I told him where I'd been looking for the idol. I told him, you know, like kind of how things were. He sort of shared the same with me. I didn't tell him about my secret alliance with Tasha and Sierra. But, you know, for the most part, I gave him a pretty good overview of where things were because, you know, you've got to share information to build trust. But I had told Spencer, like, you're safe tonight. Don't worry. And I had told him that I could definitely get him through two votes. So that was, I think, a mistake of that tribal council was not sharing that information. Although I will say that, like, part of us, you know, part of us were like, we're going to do a 3-2-1 tonight. Like, that's going to be fun. You know, I think part of us were, you know, we want to like make good TV. You know, we want to like have like fun votes happen and to like know that we were going to have Spencer and Wiggles vote against each other and Monica would get wrong. You know, like we were going to pull off the 3-2-1. I think we were like pretty excited about that too.
All right. So then after that vote, you guys have the second swap. This was a total blindside for you.
Yeah. What was the total? Oh yeah. We showed up. Right. We showed up. Monica was out. We think like, oh, so the other thing was like, I was nervous about voting out Monica because, you know, I thought Savage might see me as like a Bion trader. Like, mm-hmm. he, you know, that because like Savage was so Bion strong. The idea of voting out the first Bion was like kind of made me nervous. So we showed up and we think, oh, this is going to be big news. The first Bion has left the game. And no, it turned out bigger news, you know, because, you know, first, not Anchor. Yeah, Anchor came in, then we came in and we were like, well, Takeo's not here. Something's happened on that tribe. And we, you know, they came in without Terry and like everyone. Obviously, it was Suri. Yeah. But so total surprise. Well, then we saw there were two courses set up, right? So there was a slip and slide was right there in front of us. And there were two lanes. Like, we knew that wasn't three tribes going into two lanes. So at that point, we figured, well, something is about to happen.
Okay. And so you end up staying at Bion and being part of the third iteration of the Bion tribe. Were you bummed out you didn't get to go anywhere else, or you liked it there at Bion?
I was bummed. I mean, there was some sort of like, you know, the fact that it was me, Jeremy, and Kimmy like together the entire time was kind of nice. You know, like we've got our, you know, little core. I mean, I wanted to see the Takeo Beach, but there was something cool about being like the Bion group, you know, and certainly, like, I could not complain with that swap. That swap, like, could not have worked out better. Like, it kept Kimmy and me and Jeremy together. It brought in Tasha, who was probably my other best ally in the game. And it brought in, like, Keith, Joe, and Wentworth, which gave us a huge buy-on majority, you know, and it put like Joe in a position where I could vote him out and no one would see it coming because everyone would think Wentworth was the target. It was so perfect.
Now, this was the episode here after the second swap where you had that confessional where you really opened up about how you were bummed out that nobody wanted to go with this great plan to vote Joe out. And I really did like to see that emotion in the show because of how badly you wanted to make this happen. But it was really, I think, a point of there was a fork in the road if you were watching Stephen Fishback that season. And it was like that you were in on Stephen Fishback. This was the beginning of a winner edit, or you were out on Stephen Fishback for being so upset about wanting to get Joe out.
Living with Joe is so terrible that it's, you know, I was weeping over it. No, I think that's probably true. And it probably, you know, Jeff criticized me a lot for being so fixated on Joe. You know, there were a lot of reasons that I think he's probably right. I was probably too fixated on Joe. You know, in my mind, you know, especially after the merge, you know, in my mind, it was a lot of things. First of all, like when Joe came back into the Bion camp, it was like, I felt all of that sort of old dread returning of like, here he's coming back. He's acting like he freaking owns the place. You know, I've been here. This might have been my home for 2 weeks or whatever. And like suddenly Joe is, you know, like once again, telling me when I can eat, what I can eat, you know, like he's the one who's like running the show again. And it was just like, I felt my heart sinking. You know, part of me thought it would be a great, more to the point, Joe was once again targeting me. So he was running around trying to save Wentworth. And the people that he was throwing under the bus were me, Kimmy, and Tasha, and especially me. So like here I've got this guy who like comes swanning back into my home, acting like he owns the place. Mm-hmm. And he's like trying to get me voted out to my allies, to Jeremy, right? So he's telling Jeremy this and like, I'm hearing about it. It's funny, like Jeremy also told Tasha, or someone told Tasha, maybe Kimmy told Tasha that Keith had mentioned her name. So Tasha, of course, runs over to Keith and is like, Keith, are you trying to get me voted out? And Keith, you know, not the greatest liar in the world, is like, no, you know, like terrible, terrible liar. That was not my strategy. You know, my strategy was not like, let me run around confronting people. But my strategy was like, I am going to, take this head on and like vote Joe out. You know, we've got the numbers now. If we let him get to the merge, you know, he's going to suddenly start winning all these freaking merge challenges. Like, let's vote him out now while we have the chance. And in my mind, like, yeah, like, you know, this was a chance for me to have like a really great resume credit for voting out, you know, the alpha male. Cause like, I think everyone this season, you know, the narrative of a season really defines how you think about yourself. And, you know, because you're constantly talking, you know, like on Brains, Bronze, Beauty, they're like, where are the brains? What does that mean? Where brawn? What does that mean? You know, and in this season, we were all talking about our second chance. And, you know, my second chance, if I could eliminate Joe and prove I had, you know, taken advantage of my second chance, like I would not be as worried about getting to the end and having a really strong case for the jury. Anyway, all that said, nobody, you know, like it was a real stretch and there were a lot of good reasons. You know, Jeremy obviously was tight with Joe, you know, tighter than I knew. I didn't realize how close he was. And I think Jeremy's strategy was pretty smart, right? Like keep all these meat shields around. So I got that. Or I get that now. I didn't totally get that at the time. The other thing was, Tasha was worried about how Savage would react. And the idea that, we figured that we would be together as this new tribe for 6 days, not for 3 days. And we thought, like, if we show up without Joe, Savage is going to freak out. And he's going to have 3 days to, like, dwell and stew. And he is going to get, like, really paranoid and do, like, erratic things. And it's going to be, like, really bad at the merge. So the compromise decision we arrived at was if we lost, we would vote out Joe, maybe. But if we won, we would vote out, nobody. And then if we lost, but then people were open to voting him out the second week. We thought there'd be two challenges.
Yeah.
We thought in the second challenge, I figured I was going to throw it single-handedly if I could. But, you know, if we lost, they were up to vote out Joe. And my God, how great a move would that have been? What a great move we were denied by that. And my whole game would have been
voting out Joe pre-merge.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that have been amazing?
I guess so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But so anyway, then the surprise merge hit. And like, no chance. I mean, Kimmy was really, who like Kimmy later became friendly with Joe, but like she was so anti Joe. Like she was like, this guy comes in here and he's like, you know, acts like he's the boss. And so she was really trying to poison Jeremy. And she was like trying to like, you know, basically through his masculinity, she's like, this guy's coming into your home and acting like he owns your home, you know, like really trying to like, you know, get his like alpha spirit up in a competitive way. It's funny. Kimmy was great. You know, I really feel like Kimmy, you know, it was funny. She'd get this like gleam in her eye and her eyes would go wide and she'd like start, you know, normally she'd just sort of like hang out by the hammock, you know, go get crabs. But then like you talk to her and like, boom, like strategic Kimmy would like be on fire and we're going to do this plan. And here's how we're going to get Jeremy to do this. And here's, it was just like on and off. It was so funny.
Yeah. I really got that from you that you enjoyed the time with Kimmy out there.
Yeah. You know, like, the first few nights, Kimmy was miserable. She was so loud. She was like rolling around in the shelter all the time. I was like, I just wanted to vote her out just to get her like voice out of the camp. But she and I got really, really close. Like we were probably the closest two people out there in terms of like having like a real personal bond and relationship. And I think, you know, you saw when Spencer eventually voted me out, he was like, you know, Kimmy and Steven are the two closest people out here. I think it frightened people that like I basically, you know, had this like super strong alliance with Kimmy where like, you know, it was a tight twosome, right? Like it's a famously dangerous pair. I think that probably contributed to me being a big threat.
I don't want to spend too much time on this. How was the pig snout?
The pig snout was not that bad. Cass was so grossed out by it, but like, you know, it was like meat. It was like, you know, it tasted like bacon or not bacon, but it tasted like pork, you know, it was the gross part was that there was gristle in it. There was like a lot of little like gristle and cartilage shards. So like, that was the hardest part of it. But, you know, other people had, you know, it sounded like other people had a lot harder time with like really, really dry scorpions. My strategy too was like I filled my mouth with water before I walked up there because everyone was complaining about how dry their mouths were. Mm-hmm. So like I took a giant swig and like basically filled my cheeks with water before I walked up there to eat it. And that really helped.
And Jeff didn't have any questions for you at that point?
No, I was like, mm-hmm.
All right. So then you guys get to the merge and you see that Wu had been voted out. And now you find out that Andrew was probably going to be the next one to go over there. And so there's a lot made in the episode about did Cass and Sierra really like sort of like dig their own graves with sort of like having these outbursts, or was what we were seeing that they were sort of dead to rights. And then this was sort of like a last ditch effort from both of them to sort of try to create drama.
The Sierra thing is infuriating to me because like
why?
I tried from the moment that I remerged with her to like bring her back into the fold. Cause I thought like Sierra is someone who's going to play this a smart game with me. And she's someone who I could beat at the end, but she was so schemey, you know, like she was hustling around, like chattering with everyone. God, it's so funny. There's so much, like so many little, it's like hard to talk about one thing without talking about a thousand other things, you know? Anyway, I mean, at the merge, basically after the merge feast, you know, the whole camp exploded, you know, like everyone was off talking to everybody. And it was total, total chaos. And, you know, people's names were getting thrown out, you know, new alliances were being reaffirmed. You know, I reaffirmed my thing with Savage, you know, we reaffirmed with Jeremy and I reaffirmed with Wigglesworth, you know, we chatted with Spencer, we sort of solidified that. In my mind at the merge, it was like, Joe and Keith had told Jeremy at third buy-on, basically like, look, the Takeo five, you know, who were Keith, Joe, Wentworth, Sierra and Cass, we're a strong five. We're going to the end together. You can come with us and you can bring one other person. You can bring Tosh or Fishback. And that didn't sit right with any of us, right? That they were sort of like, A, that they thought their five person alliance was like gonna was so certain in a freaking 14 person game. And B, that like, you know, they were sort of like legislating terms of who Jeremy was allowed to bring, like, you know, who, you know, how he was allowed to come to the end. So when I got to the merge, you know, I think everyone, it was really interesting watching the episode because I think everyone kind of like was telling their own story of how it was happening. In my mind, it was like the Jeremy squad versus the Joe squad, right? And the Joe squad was kind of that Takeo alliance, whereas the Jeremy squad was kind of at its core had sort of old buy-in alliance. You know, I didn't realize how much Spencer was playing the middle. I thought Wigglesworth was with us, you know, Savage was certainly with us, Tasha. And then there was obviously a lot of muddiness around that because, you know, Joe was buy-in strong, you know, too. And so, But that in terms of, like, in my mind, that was kind of the Cold War that was happening. People talked right out of the gate, Cass, you know, there was so much misinformation and it was just like so much confusion about who was saying what to whom. And that was because there was people were lying to each other, right? Like, you know, someone would come back and say, oh my God, I heard this person say your name. Now, are they telling you the truth or are they throwing that person under the bus? And you go to that person and say, are you saying my name? And they say, no, but so, you know, such and such else person is saying your name. And there was just like so much of that back and forth. And I think, like, that's what I was talking about earlier with the scapegoat. You know, I think Tasha was like, this is Cass. Cass is chaos. This is chaos. Therefore, you know, QED, eliminate Cass. It was a really easy person to scapegoat. I do think Cass was doing some of the spreading of misinformation. You know, you saw that in the episode that she was kind of, you know, throwing people's names out. And then, you know, Sierra was saying all that stuff about Savage, which I believed. I believed Sierra when she was saying that stuff about Savage. And I, you know, Savage got furious about it. At the time, I was like, oh yeah, that's Savage. His hypocrisy is being exposed. But like, it turned out he was just like really upset that these lies were being made up about him that were like damaging his relationships in the game. But totally legitimate. You know, I think there was a little bit of like everyone was kind of running around. You know, I was mentioning Joe's name. God, you know, Cass and Sierra were like, let's just get Abby out. Like, Abby's an easy person to vote out. And like, maybe she'll be on the pre-jury trip. So like, none of us will have to live with her at Ponderosa, which was a really compelling argument, you know?
And they seemed pretty tight with her at that point in time.
Well, that was the craziest thing. It's like, they were her best ally. Even they were like, we got to get rid of her. And it was funny, like, you know, Abby at some point, like, just like walks over to them in the shelter. And is like, I saw you off talking with Joe, you know, or like whomever. Like, what's that about? Why wasn't I there? And they're like, you know, everyone's talking to everyone, Abby. And she's like, well, I'm going to expose this whole alliance. You know, what you told me, what he told her. Like, Abby was always blowing up everybody's spots. So, like, of course, like, you know, you being with Abby is as bad as being against her, you know, almost worse, because like anything you tell her is going to get disseminated to everybody else. So I do think there's a degree to which Sierra and Cass were scapegoated. You know, certainly Tasha, I think, used the opportunity to throw someone at, you know, to throw out a name that, you know, she wanted to eliminate anyway. But in my mind, like, that was fine. You know, getting out the buyout, like getting out someone from the Takeo group, like the Joe group, like that worked great for me. You know, like, I was worried about that five anyway. And then, you know, I ran scenarios with Cass because I thought, like, well, what if we could sort of like get a third wave and blindside Savage? And I didn't know that Spencer was also running scenarios with Cass. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, I think everyone was sort of considering every option, but it just sort of like came down to it that became, you know, the sort of everyone got on board with that because, you know, it was an idea and it made sense. It was funny though, like this sort of ended up having a big impact later. So we decided we should split the vote, like just in case Cass like had an idol, right? And the decision to split the vote was one of the most complicated decisions I've ever been a part of. And it like, pretty straightforward, right? X votes on Cass, X votes on someone else. But the degree to which people were like spinning and like, well, what if this happens? And what about this scenario? And what if this person votes this way and this person votes this way? It was like, you know, I think that really affected why we didn't split the votes on Savage. When Savage went home, was because it was like the most complicated, mentally exhausting decision that we're literally like that group, like the prime group would talk about it for must have been like 3 or 4 hours, like how to split the vote. I remember like going down at one point and being like, oh, what are we talking about? And they're splitting the vote. And I was like, all right, this is pretty straightforward. And so like I left because they were continuing to talk about it. I was like, no reason to sit here. And then I came back like hours later and they were still having the same conversation about splitting the vote. It was just
so
like,
what's the issue there? Is it just too many cooks and there's not one person who wants to step up and say, okay, here's what we're doing. It's this done.
I think there was too many cooks. I don't think it was the issue of like someone, I mean, maybe it was like no one being able to say done. I think there was an element to which because things were moving so fast, people were overcomplicating everything in their minds. And so it's like people were like finding complications that didn't necessarily exist in reality. Like, well, what if, you know, I mean, part of it was, you know, part of it was maybe legitimate, you know, like, well, what if we have this person voting for Cass, but actually this person is going to flip their vote? And, you know, you need to think through those things, you know, to a certain degree. Well, what if this person is not loyal? We don't totally trust this person. You know, I think on TV, it seems like these 10 people are voting one way, these 3 people are voting another way. It's easy to divide 10. But in actuality, that's not how it works, right? Like there's a lot of factions and fractions between the in that core 10. So there is a complicated element to it, but it was so overcomplicated and so exhausting. And like, honestly, like this, one of the hardest parts about this season was just how mentally exhausting it was. Like dawn to dusk every day, just like everyone was on the beach constantly making alliances and reconsidering things and making new deals and like reaffirming old deals. And it was just like so much all the time. Like not at all what it was like in Token Chains, where it was like in Token Chains, there were like two alliances and maybe a third, you know, and like that didn't vary. You know, there was this group and then there was that group. And then like JT and I were between the two of them, you know, and it was like, this is pretty straightforward. Not at all. It was like the difference between like algebra and calculus, you know, in this season, no, you could, like everyone was a floater, you know, everyone was a free agent. You couldn't trust anybody.
And this is around the time that the voting blocks term starts getting thrown around. And there's been a little bit of debate since the season has ended, and certainly as the season went on, as to whether or not voting blocks actually was a real thing. You talked about it a lot at tribal councils, yeah, about how there had been some new evolution in the game at this point in time. Other people, Tasha specifically mentioned, no, voting blocks was just something that we were throwing out there to throw people off the scent. Do you really believe that there was something different in the air and there was an evolution in the game this season?
I do. You know, and it's probably not as extreme as like a total deconstructing of the of alliances, right? And, you know, I do think, though, that the idea that one, you can, a group of people can come together for one vote and then completely dissolve, and another group of people can, you know, can come together for the next vote, you know, based on their strategic needs at that time. You know, I don't know if it's I actually don't know if it's better strategy, but it's definitely a different strategy. You know, and it certainly helps. It helps some people and hurts others. But, you know, I think the idea that, you know, you're locked into an alliance is very rigid thinking. And I think the game was a lot more fluid this season. And I think, you know, in terms of like no one was willing to accept being on the bottom, and they were willing to do whatever it took to change their fate. And I do not think that's true in any other season. You know, like whether it's Abby or Keith or, you know, me, you know, like all of us were you know, none of us were happy when we thought that a more dominant group was taking control of the game, and we were all willing to switch sides when it was, you know, when that was beneficial. And I do think that's a different way, you know, for the game to be played. You know, even if functionally, you know, I think some people kind of voted together. You know, there were alliances within the voting blocks. You know, like I was mostly voting with Jeremy and Kimmy, and, you know, like Wentworth and Abby mostly voted together. But like, I think that even within that, you know, there probably was more play than there has been in previous seasons.
But was the genesis because you guys all knew each other, or because there had been two tribe swaps? Like, I can't see that sort of scenario being recreated in any season of all new players.
I think the all new players are always going to want to like first establish, you know, you're building your first alliance. There's something very exciting about that. Like having watched Survivor for years, or maybe if you're, you know, maybe you've watched Survivor one season in casting, you know,
in the hotel room. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's something like exciting about I'm building an alliance, you know? So I do think that is always going to be kind of an anchor point, you know, whether that will then evolve into like this alliance is fluid or this alliance is, you know, I hope it does. I think it's more exciting TV. I think it's more exciting gameplay. You know, I definitely think the swaps contributed to that, right? Two swaps means everyone has kind of been with everyone. We all have divided loyalties. So there's no one is really locked in. And, you know, we're all returning players. We were all hard players, right? There was, for the most part, people were pretty strategic, right? As a whole, this season was probably one of the most, if not the most, you know, pound for pound strategic season ever. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, you know, ultimately, like, the voting block thing is hard because, you know, if you burn people who you've been tight with, they're going to be pissed at you. That's always going to be the case. So it's like, how do you kind of navigate that tension between like, we're a solid group and we're voting together versus like, we are a group that's together for this one vote and like next time we won't be. Well, you know, to a certain degree, like I wasn't pissed when, you know, I voted with Wentworth to vote out, you know, Wigglesworth. I wasn't pissed at Wentworth when she then voted against me the next tribal council, you know, like I think it depends, right? I think for certain people, you trust them and you put your trust in them. Like I was pissed at Spencer. You know, I felt like Spencer betrayed an alliance, and I didn't feel that it was the case with Wentworth, where I felt like Wentworth, we were together for a vote and then she was not with us for the next vote. So I think, you know, I think they exist in tandem. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a great, you know, clearly I don't have a great unified theory of voting blocks.
I don't know if there is one yet. We'll see if we can get Stephen Hawking working on this more than Stephen Fishback. So then let's go to this next episode, which is the one where I really thought this was the night you were going home. And I was so nervous because it was the night that we knew that Nicole was going to be going to the hospital in the morning to begin being induced to have the baby. And I said, I can't believe it. Frickin' Steven couldn't wait one more week to get voted out. And he has to get voted out on the day that I'm not going to be around to do the exit interview. And they really made it seem like that you were going to be going home. And people at Twitter was just going, blowing up like, oh, Steven's getting voted out.
Well, the other thing was that the spoiler list had me going home that night, too. And I wonder if they like partially edited the episode like to tease the spoilers more, you know, because like the fact that the boot list, like this was the first point where the boot list was wrong and that had been spoiled. I don't know. The editors are aware of that. I kind of wonder if they didn't make that seem more the case.
Yeah. So then it looks like you're going to go home. And of course that you are pushing for Joe. That word sort of floats back to Andrew, who tells Joe. And then
that was
like,
crazy. Andrew like overheard me. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had no idea that happened until I watched it.
And they were coming for you.
Yeah. It's funny. I was talking to Tony about it and Tony said, Hey, Fishback. I'm not going to pretend.
Steven.
Yeah. This was all over Twitter DM. So, you know, he was like, if Joe had lost immunity, he thought I would have gone home, which I think may be true because I would have like gone guns blazing for Joe. And then that group would have voted me out. I think that is correct. But, you know, because Joe got immunity, it's such a weird, like, it doesn't even make rational sense, right? It's like some sort of emotional logic. But like, because Joe won immunity, he was safe, and therefore, like, the vote shifted to someone else, and so it was easier for Jeremy to, like, protect me. You know, it was, like, just this whole mess of consequences. But I do wonder now, like, maybe I would have gone home.
But Jeremy really saved your life that night before we even get to when he played the idol on you, because he's like, no, we shouldn't vote out Steven. Too early.
Yeah, and I, you know what, like, I'm very grateful for that. Like, that was not as unusual a moment as a lot, you know, that was happening constantly, right? Like in conversations, people's name was coming up and then someone else who was their ally would make a more compelling argument for someone else. Like I did that with Sierra like 100 times, you know, like the Wigglesworth booth, like Jeremy's name came up and I was like, can't do Jeremy. So like that was awesome. And that certainly saved me. And, you know, but that was what the point of alliances were, right? Is like you have people in other conversations who are like, who have your back. So that was like, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for Jeremy for that, but like, I don't want to like overemphasize that as like this incredible, like this amazing moment, like, you know, because playing the idol for me was an amazing moment. This was like a sort of normal, but very nice moment. But yeah. I mean, I actually remember walking over to that little conversation and Savage was really sick that day. So he was like laid up in his hammock and like people were like going over to him like he was the king and like paying fealty. But I remember walking over there and like I got a really weird vibe off of everybody. And I was like, what are we talking about? And they're like, it's still Wentworth, right? Wentworth. And I had been the one pushing for Wentworth because everyone else wanted Sierra gone and I wanted to work with Sierra. And so I had kind of like aggressively made the case that Wentworth was more devious. And now that she'd played this idol, oh no, that she hadn't played the idol yet. You know, she was more devious and that like, you know, she was more Joe's lieutenant and Joe had immunity. So this was an opportunity for us to weaken Team Joe. And like, she wasn't really loyal to, I mean, like really struggling to save Sierra in the game, which is why it infuriates me so much that Sierra showed no loyalty to me. You know, it's like, not that like she owed me anything, but like
she voted out her mom, Stephen. I mean, she barely knows you from anything,
but it's like that scorched earth policy is what made nobody trust her. You know, like you have to build trust with a few people to go deep in the game, you know, and her sort of like anyone but me policy, like, you know, doesn't work if everyone is targeting you.
Did you talk to her in the pregame at all?
No, not at all.
So Tyson didn't say like, hey, like you're my friend, Sierra's my friend, you guys should like try to get something going.
No, he actually told me you can trust Sierra up to a point, but like don't fully trust her. And in fact, and she actually came up to me first day and was like, Tyson told me that, you know, I should trust you. He had never said that. So, you know, we were both, I think, wary of each other. But, you know, I thought it made so much game sense for her to like stick with the one guy who was consistently saving her ass every single week. And she disagreed. Anyway, neither here nor there. So I had pushed for Wentworth to be the boot which, you know, and then when the split vote idea came up, you know, I worried that if the vote was split, that it wouldn't give room for a third faction to target me. You know, like that would give room for Savage and Joe and Keith and Wentworth to vote me out. So I was like, we can't split the vote. Jeremy, because the previous vote was so exhausting, just didn't want to go down that road again. So I was like, you know, I swore like there's no way Wentworth has an idol. Nobody thought Wentworth had an idol. Really, nobody thought that. Like nobody had ever seen her looking. She did a great job of keeping that thing hidden. And, you know, like Wentworth just kind of like hung around the shelter. Like no one really thought she was playing. So she was sort of seen as like, all right, like, yeah, let's get rid of her.
You talked about something really interesting in your People blog that week about the one thing that she slipped up on that in hindsight made you believe it was sort of like your usual suspects moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you talk about that?
Yeah. So we had actually the first day, you know, everything goes back to something. When I was talking to Joe, making our alliance, Joe sat down on the rice container and broke the lid of our ceramic rice container. You know, we both had containers, you know, even if we didn't have rice inside of it. So we had, once the rice kind of made its way to our beach, we had mold getting on the rice. And Wigglesworth had started cleaning the rice, but Wentworth really kept doing it. You know, and it's a really painstaking process, like cleaning out the moldy rice grain by freaking grain from a giant basket filled with rice. That is a long, exhausting thing. And Wentworth was doing it more than anybody else. And I was like, why is Wentworth doing this if she knows she's going home? You know, like, why is she cleaning out the rice that nobody else, that she's not, that everybody else is going to be able to eat and she's not? You know, that just doesn't add up. But I dismissed it. You know, I was like, I'm being paranoid. Like, who cares? Like, you know, we've got her dead to rights. You know, who knows what goes on in the minds of Wentworths, you know, in this world. And yeah,
especially when it comes to rice.
Yeah. So I dismissed it. And, you know, there was a reason she had been. And even at tribal council, when Jeff asked her, you know, like, is there a reason that you're not outing this big alliance, you know, this alliance that's against you? She was like, well, maybe I'll be here tomorrow when I'll have to work with these people. And I kind of rolled my eyes, like, yeah, right, girl. You know, sorry, but sorry, not sorry. And it turned out, like, you know, she played her idol perfectly, you know, whatever, 10 votes or whatever it was were invalidated against her. And, you know, a moment of I was pretty sure I wasn't going home. Cause the girls had really wanted to get out Savage. Mm-hmm. Like they had really been pushing. And I thought like, Savage or Jeremy, you know, like doesn't make sense to take me out here. Like it's going to be Savage or Jeremy. I was just hoping it wasn't Jeremy, you know, and of course, like you're always a little bit nervous, you know, like when there's something that's completely out of your hands and it was Savage. And I was like overjoyed, but also like a little bit bummed because I had really wanted to vote out Savage. And again, like here's a side thing. There's so much that goes into every like little moment of Survivor, but Joe, Wigglesworth, me, Kimmy, and Keith were talking about an alliance at this point, and we were going to talking about getting out Savage next. Now, I don't think Joe was totally on board with that, but Wigglesworth really was. So the next vote, I might have had the votes to get out Andrew Savage, and the fact that I was denied that was pretty upsetting.
Yeah, but you end up with him going out of the game, and I felt like this was probably bigger for Jeremy than it was for you ultimately, because he's gone, and you guys didn't have to vote him out, and he's not on the jury, like, pissed off at you. You're able to get somebody out of the game.
Well, it's funny, like Savage was pissed at Jeremy at Ponderosa, and in my like Jeremy apology tour that I laid, so Savage thought that like Jeremy was in on it because Savage had been targeting me, right? And Jeremy had pushed him to vote out Wentworth, and then Wentworth had played her idol. So he kind of was suspicious that Wentworth had known about it. So like in my Jeremy apology tour that I was having at Ponderosa about why Jeremy's like such a great guy, I was like, Jeremy didn't know anything about this. He was totally with you. He stopped me from voting you out. Like Jeremy's your friend. He's a great guy. So yeah.
Okay. Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing good PR.
You know, you got to.
But let's talk about this next vote, because this is where really your game goes into overdrive, because this is when now Kelly Wigglesworth is going to be the person that gets voted out. And this is the time in the game when you end up picking up the advantage. Now, at what point did you say Kelly Wigglesworth is the target that I need to get out next?
So Jeremy at this point in the game was like, when Savage was voted out, like Jeremy got super paranoid. And he was like, he really went on this witch hunt for like, who told, you know, like how did Wentworth know that it was her, basically? And I was worried that it was my fault, because I had separately told both Sierra and Abby, you guys are safe, because I was trying to build relationships with them. So I was like terrified that I had inadvertently let Wentworth know that she was the one going home. But it turned out that Joe had actually just told Wentworth that she was the one going home.
Mm-hmm.
So he, but Jeremy was like really like,
how
so
did you guys like, figure that out?
We didn't tell after the game.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, maybe like later in the game, but certainly not at that point. He at this point was getting super paranoid, and at the same time, like Tasha was getting really close with Wigglesworth. So Jeremy had seen like Tasha and Wigglesworth like go off a bunch of times. And he was getting worried that even Tasha was like now turning against him. So in my mind, like, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to like target Team Joe. Because in my mind, everything is a great opportunity to target Team Joe.
Yeah.
And so I thought like, you know, the game plan was, let's get one of the girls out. Now it's more important than ever. Like, there's three of them and they're getting an ever more significant faction in this whole mess, right? Like, in my mind, you know, Team Jeremy has X number of people who are all fluid. Team Joe has X number of people who are all fluid. That third faction of the girls who was super tight with each other, like, that was really dangerous. I think everyone was sort of like, we've got to get the girls out now before they, like, you know, run the tables on us. You know, if you give them any more leeway, they're going to start really flipping this game around. So, but in my mind, like, the girls were the only people I could beat. You know, I saw this kind of like alpha alliance that was kind of coming together, and they, everyone was like, all right, the final eight are going to be, you know, everyone but Wentworth, Abby, and Sierra. You know, I felt like this is terrible for me. You know, I have been terrible at challenges this entire season. You know, people know that I'm decently well off. I'm like well educated, you know, like I'm not going to sitting next to any of these like heroes. You know, what's my story going to be against like Joe or Wigglesworth or Jeremy or Spencer? You know, like, I thought that like almost all these people really had a really great shot against me. And I thought like my only shot is to make it to the end with some of these girls, Sierra, you know, who I knew I could beat, you know, Abby, I knew I could beat. At the time, I really thought I could beat Wentworth, you know, even with that idol play, I thought she'd get some votes, but you know, Wentworth didn't have that kind of, you know, big sort of underdog, you know, fan contingent on the jury at this point in the game as she developed later. So I was like, I thought I needed to save the girls, but I couldn't trust the girls. I knew I couldn't beat the people I could trust. You know, Jeremy, I thought Tasha would, you know, probably beat me. I think I was wrong about that. Oh, and then I had this conversation with Tasha in the woods where we went off and we hadn't caught up for a while, and we tried to have like daily catch ups. We hadn't had one for a while. And Tasha says to me, all right, here's the way it's going to be. You know, you, me, you know, we're going to go with this eight, which was like me, Tasha, Jeremy, Kimmy, Spencer, Keith, Wigglesworth, and Joe. And like that, we're just going to knock these three girls out. Then we're going to, you know, from that eight, we're going to go down to, you know, five with Spencer and Kimmy. And like from there, you know, you, me, and Jeremy are the final three. And I was like, not Jeremy, you know, like not firefighter, two kids, hero, Jeremy. Like, we're not really talking about like going to the end with him. And she was like, yes, you know, we're all going to play our own games. We're going to get to the end and we're going to make our cases of why we deserve to be there. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, you know, I said yes, because I kind of pushed her back a little bit and she like wasn't budging. So I was like, okay, that sounds good. And then I like freaked out because I was like, I gotta fix this now. Like, I can't let these girls be voted out right now or I'm done. Like, I don't have a shot to win. First, I went to the girls and I was like, you know, you're at the bottom, but like, I want to make a move. And, you know, let's like, well, who do you want gone? And they said, like, Sierra was like, we want Jeremy gone. And Sierra was the one who really spoke for the girls. And, you know, for better or for worse for her, you know, she definitely seemed to be playing the game harder. But like, I think that probably ended up to her getting voted out earlier. So I said, non-starter, like, what do you think about Wigglesworth? And they were really into it. Like, they, you know, so of course. So that's when I sort of pitched it to Jeremy and Spencer, who were like not having it at all. And Jeremy was like, we don't need them. You know, we've got Kimmy, you know, and I was like, don't tell Kimmy. And Jeremy still teases me about this because I was like freaking out, like, do not tell Kimmy, because Kimmy really wanted Jeremy gone. Like, Kimmy really wanted Jeremy gone. And she was the one who kept pitching all these different plans to get rid of Jeremy. And so, but like, he didn't know that. He's like, I'm just going to sit down with Kimmy. I was like, please don't sit down with Kimmy. Like, don't talk to Kimmy about this. And like, I kept on insisting, like, every time he was like about to go off, he'd be like, you know, maybe I'll talk to Kimmy about this. And I would like freak out. He was just basically like antagonizing me at this point, just like teasing me, like, maybe I'll ask Kimmy what she thinks.
Did he know?
What?
That he knew that then at that point that Kimmy wanted to get him out, or he was just messing with you?
He didn't know, but I was like, look, don't talk to Kimmy. Like, she's, you know, I didn't want to totally out Kimmy. So I didn't say, you know, Kimmy wants you gone, but I was like, you know, Kimmy's not trustworthy right now. Like, don't talk to her. So he got the picture, but then he started teasing. He didn't necessarily know that she wanted him gone, but he started to antagonize me about it, 'cause I was so insistent, like, do not talk to Kimmy, that he just sort of hector me about it. I love Kimmy.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So the Wigglesworth plan is in motion. And at the same time, day 24, this is when you get your advantage in the game. Now, were you emboldened at all by getting the advantage that you felt like, hey, I got this advantage in my hand and now I have to pull the trigger on a big move also?
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, I think that like it really was a high point in the game for me. Like I was about to make a big move. I had this advantage. Like I saw a clear path to the end. You know, the problem with the advantage is it's so beguiling, right? Like it's so cool and so good that as soon as I got it, I was just like, you know, daydreaming about all these like awesome fantasy uses I could play for it. You know, I was thinking like final six, I could flip on my, and this was probably my first mistake with the advantage. I had quite a few mistakes with the advantage. The first one was I didn't tell Jeremy about it, and that was bad. And I think if Jeremy had known about it, he would have had much more trust of me. And that first vote against me probably would have never happened. But the reason was I thought I was going to have to use the advantage against Jeremy. You know, I thought like that was going to be my move. You know, I would go down with my core group to like five or six, and then I would play the advantage and flip the game against them. And if he didn't see it coming, he wouldn't be able to protect against it. Whereas if he knew what it was, then he would probably, he could like kind of outthink it, you know? So that was a mistake, not telling Jeremy, because then he was very, very suspicious of me. But yeah, sorry, this is getting ahead of things. Yeah, like having
no,
that in
but
my
it
hand,
makes sense, and it does help illuminate. I think a lot of people want to know, like, well, how were you going to be able to avoid the Spencer and Tasha thing? Of weren't you going to the end with Jeremy anyway? But it sounds like that you're looking at the witches, and now you feel like you have this advantage in your pocket. And at some point, you're going to be able to use the advantage, which Jeremy isn't going to be able to know about. And at some way, you're going to be able to find yourself in the end with two of these three people that you consider to be goats.
Yes. And my thought, too, was like, I will steal the vote from the person who I'm not going to vote out. That way, people will, like, if people, someone has an idol, they'll play it for the person whose vote was taken. But they... And then that the person who is not, whose vote wasn't taken, won't see it coming as much. So I was sort of figuring out, like, you know, in my head, I had this, you know, beautiful scheme where, you know, I stole Jeremy's vote and voted out Tasha instead because Tasha was the bigger challenge threat. And, you know, just this whole sort of elaborate, like, you know, it was so beautiful. It really would have been beautiful.
You were the hero of your own narrative.
Yeah, I was the hero of my own narrative. That's exactly right. And it's funny, like, watching, you know, I really want to reemphasize that, like, you know, I'm talking about how in my mind it was Team Joe versus Team Jeremy. You know, when you watch the season, that's not how other people are processing it, right? Like Spencer at the merge is talking about a totally different alliance structure. And I think that's what was so interesting about this season. You know, Savage is talking about a different alliance structure. Like everyone was perceiving the same, you know, perceiving things from a completely different framework. And because things were so fluid, you know, it really did allow for a lot of different interpretations. But for convenience, you can't just say everyone could go every which way. You know, you kind of have to tell a narrative to yourself about how things are working. You know, otherwise it's like, you know, it's like life. It's just a bunch of random phenomena that we craft into a story.
So then let's talk about the ultimate Thanksgiving night eve where it really is a remarkable 2 hours of Survivor where it's really like you have almost like a 2 hour boot episode.
Yeah. I was so glad when I found out those two episodes were going to be together. 'Cause I was like, these are my most miserable episodes, right? Where I'm embarrassed, you know, I'm embarrassed physically. I'm embarrassed strategically. I'm embarrassed strategically again. Like, let's just have it all at once. You know, like I can't deal with 2 weeks of this. So I was happy that it was all one thing.
But it's like a movie. It really is. It's sort of like, I guess if, and depends on if, again, if you're the protagonist or the antagonist. I mean, you have like such an arc over those 2 hours.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was really... It was like my little story. It was nice coming off the previous episode too. I felt pretty good about it. You know, I actually passed Spencer as the confessional leader for the first time. So that was pretty exciting.
In an episode or for the season?
For the season. like I think after that 2 hour episode, I was ahead of Spencer.
Okay. Well,
yeah. little small victories, Rob, small victories.
This episode is going to start off where, again, now Sierra, who you had wanted to work with, you know, that she goes on this reward challenge with Joe and a couple people and is basically saying like, hey, I'm up for anything. And then it turns into a whole group of people wants to get you out, including Tasha, who you had been tight with. So can you just talk about what you were going through, how you were perceiving things in this moment, and then the differences in from what you saw to what they actually were?
Yeah. So I was super sick, right, in this period. This is when I got really, really sick. And
severe gastrointestinal distress, as they say.
Yes. Severe gastrointestinal distress. And I like really lost the thread of the game. And I think if I lost the game at any point, it was when I got sick. And when I just sort of like those few days are just still kind of this like black, you know, confusion for me where I don't really know, you know, a few things that happened. And, you know, I think like in my mind, the Wigglesworth boot was like, this going to be this, like, I knew it was going to really destabilize everything. You know, Tasha was left out of it. Kimmy was left out of it. You know, Wigglesworth was kind of this like linchpin who was in a lot of people's alliances. And I thought, this is good. Like, destabilizing things benefits me because I can move faster than anybody else out here, and I can pick up the pieces more quickly than they can. Now, just as that happens, boom, we're in this monsoon, and boom, I have severe gastrointestinal distress. So not only can I not do the strategizing because of the weather, but I'm like, you know, losing my brains, you know, in this illness. And like, you know, I was really just taxed, like emotionally, mentally, and like not at all thinking straight. So yeah, you know, like, I don't know, you know, I was worried that I was going to be kind of like this, like pity boot, you know, like, let's just like put him out of his misery, you know, send him to a better place like Jeff Varner. but you know, I thought when I kind of came out of my fog, you know, what happened was, so I heard that on this reward, Sierra was like throwing my name out, and it really pissed me off because I had been saving Sierra like over and over and over again. And I was like, fine, let's just get rid of Sierra. Like, enough is enough. You know, everyone had been wanting to get rid of her. Let's just do it, you know, because I, this is like so much context for everything. Right after the Wiggles boot, I had thought like me, Spencer, Jeremy, and the three witches, like we could be the new power alliance in this game. Like, that is perfect for me. You know, like, let's vote out, you know, Joe, let's vote out, you know, some of the other guys, you know, and then I can like ping. And I imagined myself ping ponging back and forth, you know, kind of Tonying basically between the girls alliance and the guys alliance.
Your mentor.
Yeah, seriously. You know, and I definitely certainly was confronted by how I am not at all as good a player as Tony. Seriously, like, that guy's amazing. Just like not only the speed that he operates, but like his reads on people. And like even talking about whatever, Tony's great.
We didn't realize how good we had it when we talked about that season in terms of just being in the presence of a true legend.
It's really true. Like, and I don't think we knew until afterwards, right? Like, at the time, we were like, this guy's out of his mind, and which is true, but like in the best possible way.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought things were going, and like that we were gonna. So I like kind of tried to reaffirm things with Wentworth and Abby, like, you know. As soon as there was a break in the storm, I kind of went over to them. I was like, we're together, right? Like, we, you know, we can sort of, you know, we're still good. So let me just take a quick step back. Like, okay. This is Abby. So I had been trying to cultivate Abby as an ally basically since the merge, and like always kind of just like feeding her information, being like, hey, you're safe. I've got you. You know, I'm going to make sure you're safe. Cause she and I had a really great conversation at the merge feast, and she, though, I of course later realized that like Abby requires your undivided attention and devotion, and that like the occasional sort of like building of relationships is impossible with her. So in the Wigglesworth boot, like after we came back from the challenge, she like, Spencer did this brilliant thing where he was trying to convince Sierra to go along with the vote for Wiggles. And the way for him to do that was to convince him that Joe wasn't with her. So he told Sierra, hey, like hide behind the bushes at this particular hour, and I'm going to like have a conversation with Joe. And in that conversation, he got Joe to say that Joe wanted to get Sierra out. So Sierra had brought Wentworth with her to listen in on this conversation. So the two of them heard Joe saying that he wasn't really with them. Abby, however, because Wentworth and Sierra were going off without her, flipped out. The girls, her supposed allies, were going to do something.
The witch's coven.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Abby now is on the warpath about this whole thing. And it's like, well, maybe I'm going to go, I'm going to go do something by myself too. So she takes Tasha and storms off. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Abby's going to tell Tasha all about this Wiggles boot and it's going to be completely spoiled. And Abby then walks off in a huff, and I go and try to talk to Abby, after she comes back, and I'm like, hey, are we still good? And actually this was one of the, I think it was a deleted scene of me trying to have a conversation with Abby. Like, and she's like, why? Yeah, of course we're good. What's the problem? Why wouldn't we be good? Yeah. And I was like, well, just things are a little weird right now. And I was like, you're weird. It's just like trying to have like a really frank conversation with Abby is basically impossible because she only responds with vitriol and snideness. So I'm getting nervous about Abby, but she's the super goat. So, you want Abby with you at the end. And Jeremy then is the one who goes kind of and talks to her and kind of talks her down. And for whatever reason, like, she trusts Jeremy, or so I believe. So fast forward a couple of days, and, I'm talking to Wentworth and Abby on the sand, trying to reaffirm my alliance post Wigglesworth boot. And I'm just sort of like idly talking to them. And like, Wentworth is a little bit away. Like, she's kind of like in the distance. And I'm like right next to Abby, and Abby's sitting on a rock and I'm sitting in the sand. And like, I'm trying to have this conversation with Abby. Like, are we good? I want to establish an alliance. I want to work with you in this game. And again, like, Abby's giving me like, yeah, of course we're good. Why wouldn't we be good? And I'm like just to like kind of like keep my nervous energy in check, I'm sort of like tracing in the sand, like idly tracing my finger in the sand. And Abby looks down and is like, what's that? And it turns out I was tracing the letter A. And Abby's like, are you trying to get me out? Are you trying to vote me out? And I was like, well, no, you're the only person out here who can see this A. Here, I'll get rid of it and I'll draw an S. That's my first initial. But apparently after this moment, Abby wanted me out entirely because I was tracing an A, so she thought I was out to get her.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a reason to want not trust you.
I know. There you go. So anyway, yeah, so I'm super sick, and then
you
should have
said no, I was drawing my final two.
Yeah. I was writing my vote for the winner of this season. Like, what was her, like, everyone else, I got their game, but like, I still, to this day, do not understand. Like, how did Abby think she was going to win? Like, what was her game? Like, be as mean to as many people as possible, and like, they'll...
I believe the Abby Maria doctrine is...
With me, you're dead.
Well, just really...
Yeah.
Just get rid of anybody that wrongs you. It's the Inigo Montoya philosophy.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe, she imagined she would end up as the final one. So anyway, we get back. So I'm like fine with Sierra, but I'm like so out of it for that like period of time that I'm like completely basically removed from the game. When we get back from the challenge, we have a new shelter, we have a fire roaring, we get cookies, and like, I also got treated a little bit medically, so I was feeling a lot better, like a lot better. And as soon as we get back, I got back from an interview, like Sierra and Kimmy run up to me and are like, hey, so we think it should be Spencer tonight. And I was like, really, Spencer? Everyone's in on this? Like, I was like, imagine I had like been in like, I'm like plucked from the game for 3 days. And like, now I was being like put back into it. Cause that's as much as I knew was going on. And I was like, yeah, really? Like, I was totally taken aback by this. So I was like getting really nervous because in my mind, like, Spencer was one of my best allies and he was a really important number. And I was like, okay, yeah, of course. Like, let's do Spencer. And then I kind of go, so then I also said to Sierra, like, Who would we do after Spencer? Like, just to kind of get a sense of like where they're thinking. And they're like, oh, we do Keith next. We do Keith after Spencer. I was like, oh, okay, sure. So I go into overdrive and I'm like, we got to save Spencer. I'm not going to like sacrifice my game on this, but like, I'm going to do whatever I can to save him. So I talk to Kimmy. I try to convince her, like, we need Spencer. Let's get out. Sierra now. Sierra's so schemey. I talk to Joe, like, try to get him to see, like,
and this is the same vote he's voting against you.
Yeah. So in my mind, I'm running around the beach, like trying, like, Jeremy sits down with me and Kimmy and is like, are you, you know, I'm trying to hit, him, like, we can't be out at Spencer now. Like, we got to get at Sierra. I'm running around this beach, like, trying to save Spencer. Then a few things. And so right before tribal council, like, I was at an interview and I was like, they're like, you know, do you think you know, what's happening tonight? And I was like, yeah, you know, I think I've got the votes. I think I've got Sierra going home. But then a few weird things happened, like where Wentworth came up to me and was like, well, what are we going to tell Spencer? And I was like, well, what do you mean? What we'll tell Spencer? Like, we're, you know, it doesn't matter what we tell Spencer. We're voting for him. Right. Because I thought Wentworth thought we were voting for him. She's like, well, yeah, but, you know, yeah. You know, she was kind of like waffly about it. She's like, well, yeah, but like, you know, we should have a good, you know, like if we're splitting the votes, who are we telling Spencer he's splitting for? And I was like, well, we'll tell him he's splitting for Sierra. We're not going to tell Spencer to vote for Spencer. So there was something a little bit weird about that. This was my biggest mistake, maybe in the whole game, was I did not go get my advantage and I did not take it to tribal council. And the reason was because I had buried it about, you know, a significant walk away from camp and my feet were such a mess. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, we're about to leave for tribal council. Everyone is already freaked out about this advantage. If I walk off now and it takes me like a half hour to hobble there and to hobble back, and I dig up this advantage, the vote, that's enough time for this vote to flip. I've got the vote locked in, you know, let's just go with it. You know, like, I don't need that advantage tonight. And the other thing is, like, you're very paranoid. You're always paranoid at tribal council. You know, you always think it could be you. And I was scared of playing it at the wrong moment. You know, like, if I take this advantage with me at tribal council and my natural paranoia kind of like clicks in as it usually does, like, I'm probably going to play the advantage and I could look dumb, you know, playing it when I don't even need to. And that was my biggest mistake, I think. Like, I should have burned that advantage immediately. You know, I think with the advantage, you want to have it, you want to know what it is, and then you don't want to have it anymore. You know, you want to get rid of that thing as fast as possible because it just creates a target for you because it's an unknown. You know, I had a super powerful advantage, but there's no actual power in the game that will ever equal what people are imagining it can do because people's imaginations are going to be, you know, according to whatever situation, right? They're going to think, well, we're doing this thing now. Maybe Fishback's advantage can counteract that. So their imaginations are shifting as different situations arise. So anyway, we get to tribal council and like, as we go to tribal council.
So basically you're saying the advantage is like the ring is like the precious. You need to just take it to Mordor as soon as possible and destroy it.
Yep, just throw it into the flames of Mordor.
Or to put it into Survivor terms, basically like the way that they play the hidden immunity idol at the fake merge in Gabon when Randy takes the idol and throws it into the ocean, that's how you'd want to play. Yeah.
Yeah, except like I think you need to play it at Tribal Council just to prove to people that it's like actually gone because I think there's no amount of, you know, there's no like amount of action that will ever like, you know, like in the middle of the snow, of the rainstorm, when I was getting up every like 5 minutes to like be sick, Jeremy was certain that I was going to a secret shelter that I had that was stocked with food. Like that was my advantage.
That would be nice.
Like, it would be really nice.
Well, he went to a secret place to go find an idol. So I guess we figured there's a lot of that going around this season.
I guess that's right. Like maybe that contributed to it. He, you know, thought that there was like some magical shelter, you know, thing in the woods for me. So, you know, that's the kind of like amount of suspicion and mistrust that it creates. So, you know, I get on the way to tribal council, I like freak out where I think like, oh my God, you know, this is like Wentworth's remark, like Sierra's remark, like, why would they target Keith next? You know, that doesn't make sense. You know, Sierra like and Wentworth would never target Keith. Keith is 100% with them. It does not make sense for her to have said. And so I realized like, oh my God, they're voting for me. Now I had no idea that like so I thought it was because again, like this is getting so fine detailed. Like we were splitting the votes. We were supposed to be like someone had told me like Tasha had said, hey, we're going to split the votes between Sierra and I don't know, whoever it was, Wentworth. And I was freaking out that split vote was going to let the third faction vote me out. And so I kept on like, I was like, as we walked into tribal council, I was like gesturing to Jeremy, like I'm done. And he just like winked at me. And I was like, dude, like stop winking. Like we've got like, you know, this is like, I'm about to be voted out. Like, you know, enough like, and then at tribal council, I was like fully freaking out. Now you can tell that I'm a little bit more like aggressive in my answers to Jeff. And like Jeff kept on saying like, cause that was the time we had the immunity challenge that we all opted out of. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, was this $1 million mistake? And I was like, no, like playing in that, I was trying to like justify myself. I was like playing in that immunity challenge for me would not have been like, a smart decision, even if I were voted out that episode, right? Like, but for Sierra too, it's not like she's going to beat Joe in the,
right.
You know, I mean, you can't like, that's not like, you can't think about like that kind of consequences level, you know, thinking. It's like X happened, therefore Y happened. Like, no, there's like a million things that like lead to Y happening, and X is just one of them. Anyway, the votes came up. I was totally freaking out, and I knew I was going home, and then like Jeremy saved me, which was like crazy.
So when you say that it was the biggest mistake in the game to not go dig up your advantage, do you feel like that you would have then, because you were so paranoid, played your advantage? I don't know what it would have changed to play your advantage.
Well, the only change is that it would have, I think it would have changed Tasha's vote, because Tasha was really like, did not want to vote me out. And so I think that if I had played the advantage, she might have switched her vote to whomever. Like if I had stolen Sierra's vote and voted for Sierra, she might have switched, played her advantage. She might have switched her vote to Sierra as well.
But even if you played it wrongly, are you saying that you feel like then not having the advantage would have been enough to save you at the next vote?
Well, that's more the fact. Like the reason that everyone, you know, Spencer claims the reason that he targeted me the next vote, I'm not totally sure about this, is because he was so scared about the advantage. You know, I think that's maybe part of it. But yeah, I think that had I not had the advantage, then, you know, I think Jeremy would have likely been the target the next week.
Okay. So then you survive the Sierra vote, and now you are still in the game by the grace of Jeremy. Is any part of you now like, boy, that's great that I'm saved, but like I am so screwed in that I can't vote Jeremy out?
Well, no, I thought more actually quite, I was like, I have to vote Jeremy out.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought like I don't really have a shot. This has really hurt my shots of winning. And like Spencer and I would talk about it. Spencer and I had like a long heart to heart after this, where like, because like he and I, we were, you know, obviously tight before the game. You know, we were tight in the game when we were together on Biome, but like we had kind of stayed apart from each other because people were really suspicious of us working together. And he basically came to me and was like, after that vote, was like, Jeremy told me, or like everyone told me that, you know, you were out to get me and you were trying to target me, and that's why I targeted you. And I was like, oh my God, no, like that's not at all what happened. You know, this is terrible, and this is because we've been working against each other. Like, let's work together like more closely. And not that we've been working against each other, that we haven't been like close. Like, let's, if this is now like a wake up call, like we can be close together, we can run this game together. You know, and I even said to him, like, look, you'll probably beat me at the end. It's probably stupid to say to him. Like, it's probably dumb to ever say to someone, you'll beat me, because then they are aware that they're a threat to you. That was probably dumb. But anyway, so we had like some really long conversations and heart to hearts at that point in the game, where like in my mind, like, you know, we had kind of put whatever, you know, mistrust there was behind us. You know, he'd voted for me once, but whatever, like that, you know, it happens. So, you know, and Tasha had voted for me too, you know, and like I was doing the same thing with Tasha by taking her on a reward. But anyway, like, long story short, he made it seem like, I don't even know where that long story began, but yeah, like I was more nervous about Jeremy. Like I knew that like that hurt my winner chances, and certainly like how could I ever beat Jeremy after he was the only guy who, you know, after he had like literally saved me in the game.
Okay. So now in this episode, you go to the reward challenge, and it's the old like Survivor Witch Project challenge of the story. And look at you win the reward challenge here.
Yeah, I was so psyched. Like that was such a cool challenge. Like walking into that challenge at night with the flames going, it just looked magical.
Great.
Yeah. And like being like winning it was just such a thrill. I was so psyched about that.
And one of my favorite moments was at that point where you walk up and Abby Maria is looking at the clue, and then you uncover the lid for one, and she grabs it and runs away. what do you say? Like, oh, sorry, Abby.
Yeah. I mean, I just grabbed a lid. She grabbed it. I was like, okay, like that's, you know, don't have bad decision making on your part. But she was furious about that.
Yeah, such a great moment. Now you end up edging out Spencer by a hair. He had the right thing, but he just wasn't able to.
It was really, really close. I mean,
very
it was like
close.
Insane how close. Like we were unwrapping. We got there at the exact same time. We were unwrapping at the exact same time. Like, you know, I just unwrapped it a half fraction of a second faster than he did. And same with the reward, by the way, or the advantage. Like he was like, it was like almost too close to call. Like Jeff needed to like get confirmation that it was in fact me who touched first.
And so do you think that sort of burned him up also, that you beat him in the reward challenge and sort of like really emboldened him to want to take you out at that point?
I think that had to be part of it. You know, like, I think there's probably a lot of things that go into this decision. And I think one of them is, like, on the one hand, he's losing all of the, you know, he's narrowly losing all the immunities to Joe. And on the other hand, he's like losing the strategic stuff and the mind stuff to me. Like, again, like very narrowly in both cases, right? So he's almost, he's like number two in physically. And then he's like just number two mentally. And it's like, no one wants that, right? People want to win. People want to like stand out. And, you know, I'm sure, I think from Spencer's perspective, when he had that vote and he had the choice, like, do I want to be like the number one mental guy or the number one physical guy? Like, he's a brain, right? That's how he defines himself.
So, but isn't that the opposite of the Jeremy doctrine, which is I don't want to be the number one guy at anything?
Yeah, but it's different, right? Spencer and Jeremy are very different. Spencer, like, Jeremy is like the number one guy who's like a jury threat, and he knows that, right? He's in like, you know, I think Spencer had really been, you know, his whole game had been cut off basically when Shireen was voted out. And like subsequent to that, he had had to play a very, you know, beta game, you know, in terms of like just cozying up to people. I remember on the first buy-on, you know, he was, you know, I was obviously off looking for the idols, you know, Jeremy was off, like, and he knew that he couldn't, he had to sit in camp and like watch the two of us like scramble around. Right. Cause if he went scrambling, he would be going home. And I think that kind of like defined his whole game after that. You know, that if you, it's funny, like if you go back, there was a moment on the third swap when he's or the second swap when he's on Takeo, and he says to them like, gosh, this is finally a tribe that's really coming together. I'm so glad to finally be on such a great tribe. He was literally saying the exact same words to us on Bion, you know, just kind of that sort of like kid brother. Oh gosh, golly guys, you guys are the best. You know, he was really playing that kid brother role hard. And, you know, I think, you know, he's a smart, you know, very capable guy. And he probably wanted to be the one driving strategy, not just, you know, listening in on it.
Yeah. All right. So now you have to make a choice in terms of who you're going to take on the reward with you. And I'm sure we touched on this in the exit interview, but you end up with Tasha and Jeremy as the people. And again, yeah. Spencer is the person who's left out of this.
Yeah. I mean, I had to take Tasha, you know, like she was the person who voted against me. She'd been my really a big ally of mine all game. I mean, I obviously had to take Jeremy, right? Like Jeremy would have been pissed. Right. Like Jeremy was pissed that I didn't take Tasha first, or that I didn't pick him first.
He looked it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, when he came over and was like, what the fuck? He's like, what the fuck, you know? But you know, I also, and this was really dumb of me. Tasha and I were the best, had the best memories, and we had made a deal to take each other. And that was dumb. Do not make deals with people to take them on reward.
Yeah. That's always tricky. It's always tricky.
So stuff. I thought like after I'd left her out of the Wigglesworth boot, I couldn't then like, you know, once again, betray her like that. So, you know, I don't think it would have affected Spencer's vote. And in fact, he has told me it wouldn't have affected his vote. But, you know, I probably should have taken Spencer and Jeremy on that. I think that would have been the smarter choice.
And do you think that would have changed anything?
No, but I think that would have been the right decision. You
know, but like, timing wise, though, I mean, that you're out at your reward and Spencer is back at camp with,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Kelly and That's Joe exactly right. and Abby Maria and Keith. Yes. And they're talking about, hey, I think we got to make the move against Steven.
Having Tasha be at camp like that would have been great. But that said, like, it takes 5 seconds for someone to make a plan, you know, like, If there's a plan in place, and it sounds like, you know, right, there had already been a plan against me, and this was just basically a continuation of that, you know, it was like just a second bullet. It does not take a long. I used to be very, and I was, you know, I remember like deriding Aris for going off and meditating. You know what? Like, I was wrong. I think maybe back in the day it was more relevant, but now people can make plans, especially in All-Star seasons, so fast that, you know, you're never going to be at camp 100% of the time.
I believe, yeah, you had said that it wasn't a problem so much to meditate, but at the point when they get the helicopter out.
Yeah, yeah, then it becomes like ostentatious and it's like a long time. Yeah, yeah, there's something about that.
Believe so, that's what you said.
Yeah. So anyway, like, you know, Tasha, Jeremy, and I, like, I felt like had a really good, really like affirming conversation where we kind of like laid out, you know, and really put it all, you know, but of course, like, you know, anytime two people are on reward, everyone else is back at camp, you know, annoyed at them.
And so, then at this point in time, they're making this plot against you and you guys go to the immunity challenge, but Joe, lo and behold, does not win immunity this time. Spencer does.
Unbelievable. I was so, so, so excited. I could not believe it.
And so now with what, 9 people left in the game, you yep. feel like that this is going to be the time to move against Joe, but yep. you come back to this idea to split the votes in this scenario because you have the vote advantage. What was it about splitting the votes and using the advantage? Did you feel like that this was the appropriate time to do it? Did you just start to really feel that pressure of, like, I got to burn this thing, and so this is a perfectly good time to use it?
So actually, at first, I didn't want to use the advantage at all. Like, I thought we were going to have a down-the-line vote. You know, I thought everyone was going to want to vote out Joe, right? Everyone has been talking about wanting to vote out Joe this whole game. Even Keith has been saying, like, we got to get out Joe, you know? Keith has been, like, number two.
He's the golden boy.
Yeah. You know, so I thought, like, literally every single person is going to want Joe out. This is an easy vote. We all get together, vote him out, and it makes sense to split the votes. We all thought Joe had an idol. Everyone thought Joe had an idol. Joe had been looking for idols harder than anybody for the entire game. Like, the fact that Joe didn't have an idol is still somewhat unbelievable to me, like, given how hard he looked throughout the whole show. Like, always. Like, it would be raining out, and Joe would be running up and down the beach, like, looking in every single tree trunk. Like, he looked harder than anybody else did. And it's really is a testament to, like, how much luck there is, the fact that, like, because he put in the work. You know, he really put in the work. So I thought, like, all right, no-brainer, we all vote out Joe. And no-brainer, we all split the votes, because, like, there's a good chance Joe has an idol. And if he doesn't, like, so what? And, you know, Abby is a really, really great alternate boot here. And, you know, we're trying to figure out what the ideal strategy is. And then we just kind of all have, like, a team sit down. Like, everyone, we're good, right? Joe, we're all good. Vote out Joe. But then we all agree to vote out Joe. And then, like, Tasha or Jeremy or someone says, like, okay, that's it. We don't need to do any more strategizing. We'll all just hang out here just to, like, and, you know, it was kind of like a Garrett move, actually. You know, we'll all sit here and, like, nobody will go off together. And then nobody has to be paranoid. And about 5 minutes after that, Wentworth comes and pulls Abby aside. And Tasha gets pissed. She's like, "This, you know, we just agreed to not do this. And now she's doing this, like, immediately."
And Tasha was the one who was anti the Garrett move the first time around.
Yeah. I guess, like, it's different on, like, day three than, you know, from day 30. Like,
hey, maybe Garrett has a point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there had just been so much spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. And, like, we finally had, like, an obvious consensus target. And I was like, whatever, Abby's erratic, like, Wentworth is probably just, again, like, not noticing these little clues. And then, like, people broke off. Like, I went on a walk, you know, a confessional interview, and people, when I came back, like, everyone was kind of off together. And I was like, well, this is not at all what we talked about. And I, you know, was sitting in the shelter with Keith and Joe. And I didn't want to, like, let that Joe out of my sight. I didn't want someone to give him the heads up or make a plan with him. And then, like, Jeremy, like, pulled me over and was like, you know, come here, like, something's up, like, something's wrong, you know, something's fishy. And I was like, well, you know, and then I started to suspect, like, Wentworth and Keith. I was like, do we really trust these people? And so that's when the point of, like, maybe we'll use the advantage just to be safe kind of came out, where it was like, we were already splitting the votes, right? Like, as far as I knew, the whole tribe was coming together to split the votes. The advantage was more like the insurance plan to, like, just make sure. It wasn't like the advantage came first and then the vote split came. To just make sure that it... And so I pulled, I by this point, Jeremy and Tasha knew what the advantage was. I pulled Spencer, and I was trying to run every single scenario, given who was the most likely to flip their vote, you know, to make it a locked up vote that had the likeliest possibility of sending Joe home versus Abby home. And, you know, obviously certainly versus me home. And, you know, I needed someone who could run the numbers with me. So I brought Spencer in, and we sat for, like, probably an hour just going through every possible permutation of who votes for who and how, like, what, you know, based on their likelihood to actually stick to their vote. And I thought I had it locked up. You know, I thought, like, you know what, there very well may be a plan happening against me here, but it doesn't matter. I have enough numbers. I have my five, you know, me, Jeremy, Tasha, Kimmy, and Spencer. I know they're all solid. I have my sixth vote. So I'm safe. And the only danger here for me is if both Abby and Joe have idols. But, like, just as we're going to tribal, like, Jeremy says, you know, I think something's fishy about Spencer. Like, something's not right with him. And I'm like, dude, you're being paranoid. Like, you were paranoid about Tasha a couple weeks ago. You know, like, it's fine. And I didn't fully trust Jeremy because of the vote that he saved me at, where people were telling me Jeremy was part of the discussions to vote me out before he chose to play his idol on me. You know, it didn't make sense to me. Like, why is Tasha voting for me and Jeremy is not? You know, like, there was some sort of, like, fishiness to it, and I didn't totally get it. So anyway, you know, that's why I split it as I did. As it was happening, I remember watching Spencer voting and, like, thinking, like, he's taking a really long time. Like, that's not how long it takes to write Joe. But, you know, that I didn't trust again. My, you know, there, at that point, the one thing I could have done was switch both votes to Abby. But, you know, it's like, I felt like, don't, you know, you've got this shot, you got to take it. And you feel good about your numbers, you know? And it's like, that's Survivor, right? You make, it's what I said earlier, like, you make the decisions based on the information you have, based on the reads you have. And if they're right, then you do good. And if they're not, you go home. And I went home and, like, you know, I took my shot and it didn't work out. But, like, I was really happy with how I played.
You know, at some point, you know, none of us are omniscient there other than Tony. There's very few like Sherlock Holmeses out there that are playing Survivor that can really be like, OK, well, this person did this. That's what must obviously mean they did that. Right. This is happening and I can act with 100% certainty and not look like an idiot that I'm going to do this. Like, it's a really hard game. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, like, I think this season, I mean, you know, not that all seasons aren't hard.
A lot but,
like,
going on.
A lot was going on. People were constantly shifting, you know, their votes. It was just really hard to keep track of, you know, or even to know where everybody was.
Yeah. I loved the moment when you take Joe's vote away and then you went up there to go and marinate in Joe's vote before you ultimately get vote. I mean, it was just like, I know that you're a writer. I mean, to just like to script that was really just amazing television.
Well, you know, I thought, like, I gotta, like, chew the scenery a little bit, and I felt bad about it even afterwards. I was like, ugh. As soon as I was about to, I was like, that was so cocky. That's gonna come off so bad. But, like, I knew there was a shot that I was going home. You know, like, Jeff asked, I think, you know, what's the chance that someone is blindsided tonight? And I said 33% chance. And what I meant by that was me. You know, because I was like, the three people up for elimination are Joe and Abby, and then there's me, and I know that I'm getting votes tonight. You know, I can just feel it. So that's one out of three here. So that was kind of what I was saying there. I thought there was a chance I was going home. I knew my butt was on the line. Still doesn't make sense why me and not Jeremy. You know, for every single person who voted against me, you guys should be asking yourself that question still. Like, why me and not Jeremy? You guys screwed up. He won the season, and in terms of winner chances, like, after I was just saved, like, I was not in that good a position, you know? So I think that was, like, a tremendous mistake at the final nine with just six votes left in the game. And so many people left, you know, to vote for me, and especially for Spencer. I think that was a big mistake for him.
Well, what was it about Jeremy that kept all these people, all these different times that they could have voted for him, where they could have played the votes against him with the idol, or you're talking about, like, where they could have taken a shot against him here? What was it that he did that made people just not consider him to be the threat to win the game, when, especially in his first season, that's all people talked about?
You know, I think people thought, I mean, and maybe this is the problem with, maybe this was a function of voting blocks, maybe not. I mean, I think people thought that he was a threat to win, but everyone was so focused on their own momentary issues, right? Like, everyone was in the moment, and, like, it's like, I think maybe everyone thought they'd get rid of Jeremy later, you know, but, like, that's not smart thinking, you know, in terms of, like, I mean, good for me because he was my buddy, you know, he was my ally. But if you're against him, you know, if you're in a different alliance, like, you want to take out the leaders of the other, you know, you want to cut the head off the dragon. It really actually has a noticeable impact. If you cut the head off the dragon, like, the other people, like, you know, people follow people. That's just the way this game works. It's the way life works.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're talking like Coach now after playing twice.
Yeah. It's true. You know, I've become, you know, Rob, you really start to understand the game after, you know, you've hit the merge in your second season. You know,
yeah. Now, only one day, if I could only see that. Yeah. All right. Well, Steven, this was really fantastic to run through this whole season. I have all these questions for you that I pulled from the patron Facebook group earlier over the last couple of days, and I just don't have time to get to them today. What I'd love to propose is for you to come back sometime soon, like in the next week and a half, maybe 2 weeks tops, and then allow people to listen to this. I'll get more questions from people. I've got all these other questions. We could sort of go through this. I wanted to hear about what went on the jury and all of that stuff as well, too. And, you know, do another one of these interviews. Maybe not as long as this one, but if you're up for it.
This was so fun. Thank you so much. Right. Yeah. And of course, I'd love to have a question podcast at a time that's convenient for you. That sounds great. And thank you, everyone, if you've made it this far, for listening to me elaborately justify myself.
Okay. Well, also, we also have some exciting know-it-all news to mark the homecoming of Stephen Fishback back to Survivor Know-It-Alls. We are planning a West Coast Survivor Know-It-Alls here in the beginning of this next season. So we're targeting the second episode, which I think is February 24th. I don't have ticket information yet, but that is the night that we are targeting. So sort of pencil that in on your calendar. And then what I'd like to also do is get back east at some point also. So I don't want people to have to feel like they need to travel.
Oh my God. You know, the double live KIA. This is so exciting.
It's trying to target April, and I don't have a date on the calendar for that yet, but that's what we're trying to do for this special homecoming season of Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Oh my God, that's so exciting. I can't wait. I can't wait for both of them.
There's a lot going on.
First ever West Coast Live Know-It-Alls.
Yep. Now, Stephen, do you have a hashtag for this episode?
Oh my God. I don't even know. I mean, there's only half one, right? It's like extreme gastrointestinal distress. Can we go with that? That's like my personal hashtag.
No, what would you propose?
It's a lot of characters. I'm never good at the hashtags.
How about hashtag the elements?
The elements. I love that. Yeah.
Go back to your original alliance name.
Yeah. That was the best alliance ever.
Yeah. And what I'm really realizing after watching you play Survivor a second time, I feel like that you are really the ultimate wingman. And that's why I feel so good about working with you, that whoever you're best buddies with, that person goes on to have outstanding success.
Yeah, and I linger in the shadows. Yeah. What the heck, Rob? Yeah.
I just want to follow in that lineage of JT, Jeremy, and myself. I feel like whoever is working with you the closest, that person goes on to have a,
how do I break the cycle? Jeez. I don't know, you don't have to kill me. So live Know-It-Alls, that'll be exciting, won't it?
That is not what it is. And what a journey you ended up having in this season. I really feel like I said it on the podcast, but I never said it to you directly on these shows. But like, I was really just proud of you that you were able to go out there and just, you know, throw it around and, you know, a devil may care attitude. And I really do. I was very fun to go back and watch you play.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I really, really appreciate that. And, you know, thank you too to all the fans. And like, really, that's entirely the RHAP audience is entirely why I was allowed to play again. And so I'm really both grateful and incredibly angry at you all for sending me back.
I loved watching your story play out over the course of this season, and especially the way of the culmination. And especially, I love the foreshadowing of the point when you pull back the slingshot and then go to make your big move, and it inadvertently hits the other target, which was such foreshadowing for your vote advantage of how that played out. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Hot mess out there. That's it. Okay. All right. Well, it was great chatting with you, Rob, and I guess I'll chat with you soon.
All right. Hope you're feeling better, Stephen, and we'll catch up again soon, okay?
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Stephen Fishback's return to the podcast. Very excited about working with Steven again this season and the live shows that we have planned coming up, which is going to be a lot of fun. So hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and as much as I did, very fun to talk with Steven always. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming one of the Rob Has a Podcast patrons, you can check that out at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing your comments on robhasawebsite.com about all of this. And of course, we will look for some questions there as well to ask Steven when we reconvene sometime in the future. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We've got plenty more Survivor interviews coming up, hopefully. I know that Kelly Wentworth is scheduled to join me sometime next week as well. So looking forward to that. I'd love to get a hold of Jeremy somewhere along the way, and whoever else comes across is wanting to talk with me about their Survivor experience, all here on the podcast. You can subscribe, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Have a good one, everybody. Talk to you again soon.